It's all for you. Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Big program. Lots going on in Wisconsin as we speak. Evidently, Republicans think there's an entirely different form of government, and a different book of rules just for them when they hold the majority, because they have done something that boggles the mind. All along, they've been saying that they need to take collective bargaining away from workers so that they can balance the budget. It's an economic thing. Sorry, you know, times are tough. We need to take this away. We need this tool to balance our budgets. So tonight, what do? They vote 18-1 to strip collective bargaining rights away, steal it away from people, by saying it's not an economic issue. they decided, you know, we're gonna strip it away 18-1 and let those Democrats over in Illinois, let them be damned. We're going to talk with Harvey Kay, a professor over at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, about this and some other things going on there in Wisconsin. Also, Mark Norberg, a former business manager and sheet metal worker over at Local 18 there in Wisconsin, is going to be here talking about, what's going on in Indiana, and more importantly, how labor's money is being used against them in Wisconsin to back Walker. Amazing stuff. Also, Steve Hicks, president of APSCUF, the Association of Pennsylvania State College and University Faculties. He's going to be here talking about Corbett's budget. And, of course, our good friend, attorney Irwin Aronson, going to be talking. Maybe a time for a general strike. Maybe the idea of taking to the streets there in Wisconsin. The reality here is, and this is what I keep hearing, and the Republican machine is excellent at this. They have done a masterful job of focusing the debate. This country is not broke, but we're in deep debt. We've got some pretty big problems that they've mostly caused. And the frame that they keep using that, you know, we need to be more business friendly. What's good for business is good for us. And the reality is it's pure and utter nonsense. This idea that we need to be more business friendly, kind of ludicrous to me. And if you remember last week, we talked about the International Chamber of Commerce's report titled The Impact of State Employment Policies on Job Growth. You'll remember they said that, you know, Pennsylvania could create 36,210 jobs. And they pulled that number out where most numbers are pulled out. They reached behind them and popped out a number. And all they would have to do, All we would have to do in Pennsylvania is a couple small things. And this is what they're saying. This is the poison they've got for California, Illinois, New York, and, of course, us in Pennsylvania, who they've rated poor environments for business. All we need to do is cut our state wage and hour laws. Anything that exceeds the federal minimums, we need to cut those back to the federal minimums. We need to cut state leave laws, again, back to the federal minimums. And we need to remove even the most modest limitations on their employment at will doctrine, which basically means no unions. Basically means, you know, we can use you up, use you, abuse you, and then discard you. The report says we reviewed each state. We reviewed their employment discrimination laws and grouped each state into one of four categories based on the degree to which the state laws exceeded the federal law. Only one state, Mississippi, adhered strictly to federal law. Only one state. Now, understand, Mississippi, they are, last in education. They're one of the last states in child welfare. They've got one of the worst life expectancies in the country. And somehow, we're told that we want to emulate them. Somehow we want to look just like Mississippi. So, you know, and I look at this and this whole concept, if it's good for business, it's good for us. Look at Mississippi. Is it working for them? Because business is saying that's the place to be. Low education. You've got low education limits. A sea of hand laborers, a sea of people maybe barely smart enough to push the buttons, but not inquisitive enough to ask why. Because we've drained their education budgets down. We've cut their taxes down to the levels where there's no investment. Is that what we want Pennsylvania to look like? Because I would argue that's where we're heading. If we continue down this path where we're only able to reach the minimums, what's that going to say for the rest of the state? What's that going to say for the rest of the country? This race to the bottom is no good for us. No good for us at all. And you look at what's going on in Wisconsin, it's part of that, moving down to the lowest common denominator. It's taking it down, going back to we need the at-will doctrine to be strengthened so that we can use those workers, use them up, discard them like trash, just like tools. Is that what we want? And you look at all the resources that are going in here, because Wisconsin's the battleground. Indiana, Ohio, those are the battlegrounds, because those are states that have historically said, you know what, we want a strong middle class. We want people to have rights on the job. We want people to have a voice. So when you see Karl Rove reaching into his pocket, his Crossroads Grassroots Policy Strategies Group, when you see them launching 14 million dollars last year during the midterms, 25 million during the general election. They're now spending $750,000 in airtime for 1 week to run their commercial on why unions are bad for you. And why are they doing that? Because they just don't like unions? No, they're doing it because there's a lot of money in this. A lot of money for the people who fund them. And when you look at the guy who pushed this thing through tonight, this 18-1 vote, the state Senate majority leader there in Wisconsin, Scott Fitzgerald. And you hear him say, well, let me play the clip for you, because I think this is pretty telling.
Well, if they flip the state Senate, which is obviously the goal with 8 recalls going on right now, they can take control of the labor unions. If we win this battle and the money is not there under the auspices of the unions, certainly what you're going to find is President Obama is going to have a much more difficult time getting elected and winning the state of Wisconsin.
I think someone forgot to tell him the talking point, that this is about the budget. I think someone forgot to remind him that this is about saving the state. The state's in trouble. I think he forgot that, and he let it out that, oh, this is really about political payback. Oh, this is really about going after the people who are our political enemies. Oops. But he didn't have a problem. Did not have a problem pulling that out. And, you know, I got to be honest. At some point, all of us have got to wake up and realize that what's going on in Wisconsin is going to happen here. And, you know, as nice as Governor Corbett was yesterday in his speech and all of that, the reality is he is still coming after us, one way or another. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Pork Chop on line one. How we doing tonight, Pork Chop?
Hey, how we doing, Rick? I've been better, my friend.
Yeah, I'm. It's amazing what's going on down there.
I was watching the Wisconsin Eye while the whole thing was going down, and I saw what happened, and my jaw just dropped. I was like, what? You know, like, wait, what just happened? And it just absolutely blew me away.
Are you surprised?
Am I surprised on how it went down? Yes. Am I surprised that they did it? Not at all. Not at this point, no. They're, you know, gloves off. It's time to go outside, you know, and get down. That's exactly the message that they're trying to. They don't care what we think.
So now the South Central Labor Council there in Wisconsin, they authorized, while we were there, because we were one of the first places to break the story, they authorized a general strike across Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's time.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm right there with you. In fact, the thought is crossing my mind that we may be taking another road trip out there if this goes the way it looks like it might go.
Hey, you know, I talked to Sparky Mark right after everything went down, and you know, he was just as upset as I was, and you know, I'm thinking on hopping back on a plane and coming back over there. This is demeaning, you know, everything we're about. This is America, man. You know, this kind of stuff doesn't happen in America, and it's not supposed to.
This is what happens when you've got a totalitarian regime in there, where you've given one party unlimited control. This is what happens when you give people who hate democracy control. I mean, it is.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. This is completely ridiculous. I don't understand these people.
I do.
It boggles my mind.
I do. I understand it completely. You will do what you're told, Pork Chop, and you will like it.
We are
in control. You are just the peasant. You are the servant. You're the person who cleans up after me. And until working people wake up to that reality, that there is definitely an us and a them, we're going to keep playing this losing game where we're pitted against one another. Because they've got the money, they've got the resources. Karl Rove's group spending $750,000 on ads in 1 week in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
In Wisconsin. I mean, that's an awful lot of money for that state. And for what? To sway our opinion, to pit us against each other, Pork Chop.
Oh, absolutely. No,
just
absolutely.
Nuts.
I called you up. I'm just like, I'm so pissed. I don't even know what to say, man. It's just, this is completely, it's just outrageous. I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Pork Chop. And we're gonna follow this all night, and we're gonna be ticked off. If some other things develop, please call us back. Let us know what's going on.
Yeah, most definitely.
I appreciate
it, brother. I will.
Thanks so much.
We will keep in touch, and thanks for having me.
All right, good deal. You got something to add?
Yeah, I wanted to say Karl Rove is not only putting money in there, I think behind the scenes, in fact, there's some people who had reported on it that behind the scenes he was giving these people advice. I think the Republicans just made a determination. They looked at the polls, saw that, you know, they were falling like a rock. They were afraid of capitulation on the part of two Republicans, and I think they decided that they had to do something and do something now. I think this was a
their last
to a degree. It was a stroke of desperation. The Republicans are saying with the procedure we used, we could have less votes. The Democrats are saying, no, you not only violated the rules of the Senate, you violated state law. I'm sure this is going to wind up in court.
Yeah, well, so see Custer's last stand. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with a professor from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, Harvey Kay. We're back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker still isn't listening to hundreds of thousands of people protesting at the Capitol and public opinion polls showing solid majorities supporting collective bargaining and also calling on him to negotiate with Democrats and unions. What may well be the biggest pro-labor rally yet is set for this Saturday in Madison as hundreds of farmers plan to join with workers in a farm labor tractorcade at the Capitol. The pro-worker movement sparked in Wisconsin continues to reverberate nationwide. In Indiana, Thursday, thousands are expected at the state capitol there in another protest of anti-worker bills sponsored by Republicans. In Iowa, Tuesday, hundreds of people packed the state house for hearings on a bill attacking collective bargaining rights for public workers there. Meanwhile, the International Association of Firefighters is escalating its fight against these national attacks on public workers with TV and newspaper ads in Ohio and in Florida. Governor Walker thought he had built an all-powerful ship of state with total control of the legislature, but his ship has crashed on the rocks of Wisconsin's progressive people power. The Green Bay Packers, firefighters, cops, teachers, and nurses all oppose him on the collective bargaining issue, and now God is against him, too. Rabbi Dina Feingold is with the Wisconsin Interfaith Group Wisdom. She says every religion is speaking out against the governor's attack on collective bargaining for public workers. Rabbi Feingold says if given the chance, this is what she would say to Governor Walker.
Well, I would just say, Governor Walker, you've hardened your heart, as did Pharaoh when the slaves of Egypt were trying to seek truth to power. And the hardening of the heart, in the end, doesn't serve you or your people well. And it's time to soften your heart, to begin to listen to the people, not some of the people, but all of the people, to be concerned about their needs so that we can go forward together for the betterment of our state.
As Ohio Governor John Kasich delivered his State of the State address in the Capitol building, thousands of public sector employees and their supporters gathered outside to have their voices heard regarding SB 5. Jesse Russell has more.
The bill, which passed the Senate earlier this month and is now waiting for a vote in the Assembly, would essentially strip workers of their collective bargaining rights. Like his fellow Republican governor in Wisconsin, Kasich has said he needs to remove those rights from workers in order to give greater local control to municipalities. Kasich has been faced with massive rallies outside of the State House for weeks, with one of the bigger rallies happening last Tuesday. Indian Springs elementary school teacher Rochelle Wilkerson spoke at that rally.
They don't want to hear how we advocate for our students. They don't want to hear how our voices directly affect students every day.
Wilkerson said public employees didn't choose their jobs to get rich.
We do this job because we care and we want to make a difference in the lives of our state.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show. You know, this thing that's going on in Wisconsin is just nuts. And again, the reason that I think we need to cover this and the why it's so important is because we're next. We're all in the shark tank. We're all on the menu because we're not sitting at the table, folks. We don't have a place at the table, so we must be on the menu. So when I heard this today, you know, when they passed this 18-1 vote.
The rule is the law. There must be. No, Mr. Chairman, this is a violation of the Bolton Meetings Law. It requires 24, at least 2 hours notice.
What have you done?
Okay. Excuse
me. Yeah, so what they did is they just rammed it through. They just rammed it through. And I got to be honest, when we were in Madison, the citizens were in their house chanting, this is what democracy looks like. And it was. The people who were staying there in the Capitol, they set up child care. They set up medical assistance stations. They set up cleaning routines. And they really had everything in order. Maybe Walker should take a lesson from that. But you listen to that clip. That is not what democracy looks like. It's not. Just not at all. I've got the professor of democracy and justice, Harvey Kay, on the line. Professor, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rick.
You know, you listen.
Needless to say, I'm just fuming right now.
I honestly, I can't imagine how angry you must be to see this kind of thing happen in your state. I know how crazy it would make me here, but in
this
your years
state,
of study,
this is a state with, despite the perversions of McCarthy, this was a state with a great progressive history and a strong labor tradition. Not only in Milwaukee, but all across the state. And we've got the Green Bay Packers, a democratically owned, basically public professional sports franchise. And these Republicans never said they were intended to bust the unions. They said they were going to control the budget and they were going to basically provide jobs in the course of doing so. And what do? They came in determined to bust unions. I don't even think the budget repair bill mattered to them. They just wanted to break the backs of the unions. And what they wanted to do is they wanted to show governors of other states that they could go ahead and do it too. I mean, the shame of this is for 30 years, public employees have watched private employees get screwed. And now they're coming after us. And let's just hope it isn't too late.
Yeah, and I've said that before. At the end of this, what I don't get is you have someone who looks to someone else and says, you have something that I don't have. So instead of me saying I would like it, I just say I don't want you to have it. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, over the course of these 30 years, we've lost touch with the idea of solidarity. Solidarity. And the idea is, you attack my neighbor, you attack me. You attack my brother or sister, you attack me. And the fact is, we've just let them get away with this. For the past 30 years, they've broken unions. They've accumulated huge sums of capital in the pockets of the rich. And what are we left with now? A devastated economy, and now they're out to break the public good generally. I mean, that's the killer thing. Public education, they want to smash it. The public good, they want to bury it. It's like they want to turn us into China. Low wages, no democracy.
Well, I mean, when they said they were going to create jobs, they didn't say what kind of jobs. Because
right.
I could fix the economy
they didn't
tomorrow.
Say what kind of jobs. I guess they figure with maybe everyone can go out and beg,
Well, I actually heard one of these right-wing talk shows. They were talking about how in South Africa during the apartheid years, it was those white trade unionists who pushed for a minimum wage to keep those poor black people from getting those jobs. They wanted $5 an hour, and there would have been somebody out there who would have been willing to work for a dollar or 50 cents. But that's their world.
Yeah, I mean, the worldview. I mean, the part of the problem is that people just haven't taken them as seriously as they should. I mean, these people have been very clear for these last 30 years about what they wanted to do. I mean, when Reagan broke the Patco strike, when he fired all those workers, that should have been the sign. Look, when Carter refused to fight for the Labor Reform Act in 78, that should have been the sign.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Professor. And I've had this conversation with numerous friends. Do working people have any friends in the halls of power? I mean, we voted for President Obama thinking, hey, we're going to get the Employee Free Choice Act. We're going to get a fair shake at the bargaining table. Maybe we'll get a seat instead of being on the menu. Maybe we'll have a seat at the table. Hasn't happened.
Well, look, I think that the AFL-CIO, as much as we may have our backs up against the wall, the fact is we've been much too deferential to this administration. Absolutely much too deferential. I mean, I've written about this. The fact is that everyone imagined when Obama was coming into office and the Democrats were gaining the House and the Senate that we were going to see a new deal, that we were going to see Obama rise to the occasion and become the second coming of FDR. And what we've discovered is we've got, look, Carter, Clinton, Obama. You tell me when the Democrats are going to ever return to the fold of labor.
Yeah, I had hoped we'd push this guy into it. I had hoped, you know, in my lifetime, the first guy to actually stand up in public and say, yes, a union is a good thing. You didn't hear that really coming out of the mouth of Jimmy Carter or of Bill Clinton.
No, and you know what? My students, without even my instigation, have started to keep a score about what Obama said and what Obama's really done. I mean, look, I mean, I vote Democratic. I vote Democratic because basically I don't see alternatives there. And I once upon a time threw my vote away to a third party. But individually, that isn't what matters. What matters is that collectively the AFL-CIO, which I am a member of, okay, of one of the constituent unions, it is time to say, Obama, you come out, you stand with us, or how much worse can it get, you might say, right? How much worse can it get? When are we going to draw the line?
Yeah, that's what I've been asking for at least 6 to 8 months now. You know, the reality is we're dying on the table.
Yeah, we are. And, you know, if we lose in Wisconsin, I don't hold a great deal of hope for any other states either. Because you know, for example, today, this move in the Wisconsin Senate by the Republicans, unbelievable. I mean, I've been in the state now for more than just over 30 years, and I can tell you that everyone has always taken fairly seriously the open meeting law. I mean, they hold us accountable all the time, but do they hold themselves accountable, these Republicans? Not at all.
So let me ask you, in your years of study, have you seen this kind of the people be damned, we have an agenda, we're going to ram it down your throat, like it or not? I mean, have we seen in your study?
I have never seen it in Wisconsin. Okay, I mean, this is the kind of thing you expect in the state of Texas. You remember when those legislators tried to leave the state?
Went to Oklahoma. They sent the state police
right,
after them.
Right. I mean, you imagine. You know, it's like people say, "Well, this is getting more like the old Dixie." You know, I mean, where basically tyrants ran states. Okay, and they divided people in blacks and whites, and they made sure that solidarity was never a primary value. But this is Wisconsin, and I've never seen it like this. Ever. And by the way, I don't think I've ever seen it like this in the United States. I mentioned to my students today that I have always, you know, I mean, Americans have divided and we fought each other and everything else. But in the governing class of Democrats and Republicans, I have never seen the kind of divide, at least not in the course of my adult life, the kind of divide we see right now.
So do you think this is I've been looking at this and what's going on in Wisconsin, no matter what really happens, as a good thing, in that it's going to wake up working class people and maybe begin the idea of bringing some measure of solidarity back. You know, I have a friend who said, solidarity is not just a word, it's an action.
Yeah.
So maybe we're seeing, when we were in Madison, 100,000 to 150,000 people in the Capitol there, to me, that's a major victory.
Oh, no, believe me. As I'm fuming, okay, and I was telling some of my friends, I'm one of the founders of the Wisconsin Labor History Society, and I've been communicating with those, all of whom are labor people, not academics. And I said, it's like one minute I'm as outraged and energized as possible, but the next minute I get depressed. And then all of a sudden, so I go back and forth over this. But I can tell you, the folks out there now in Capitol Square in Madison, a lot of them are teachers. Teachers are, if the teachers stay in their jobs, they are going to be energized politically like you have never seen before. And I can tell you that we were finally granted collective bargaining rights this past year. And just as we were in the process of signing cards to stage a representation election, all of this happened. So we never even got the right to organize to begin with. And they're about to take 10% of our incomes away, and we don't even have a voice. So this idea of getting to the table, I don't even know if there's a table anymore to get to.
Yeah, there's definitely the king's table. The problem is you and I don't have a seat. We have a place on the menu. Because we're the ones who are being devoured.
I like that. That is good.
Well, we're the ones being devoured.
I'm crying as I say it, but that is really good.
Well, I mean, there's only one or two places in this.
Right, no, on the menu. I love that. In fact, I got to remember it next time I get into my class.
There you go.
That's great.
Harvey Kay, I appreciate the time. I'd love to have you back again real soon.
I'd be happy to. You know, I mean, we haven't talked about history and its implications. I'd love to talk about Thomas Paine, Franklin Roosevelt, what we might yet do. So don't hesitate to have your have your friend and my friend, Brett, get in touch, okay?
All righty. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Professor of Democracy and Justice, Harvey K. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson, is going to talk about General Strike. Is it possible? We're right back after this.
Center of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Beware. Laissez-faire ideological loonies are loose in Washington. They're waving machetes, toting sledgehammers, and going right for your Social Security. The system is broke, they shout, so we must reform it. By reform, they mean destroy, either by privatizing it or gutting it by slashing benefits and raising our retirement age. Also, when they say that Social Security is broke, there's one little question they don't want you to ask. Where did all that money we've been paying into the system go? They don't want you asking that because they stole it. Social Security is remarkably effective and has been very efficiently run. However, a change came in 1984 when the payroll tax was increased a bit to create a surplus to cover the future retirement of the large baby boom population. The extra tax that we've been paying into this trust fund for the past 27 years has added up to $2.6 trillion, including interest. Good planning. But no one locked the trust fund. So lawmakers of both parties have routinely been looting our retirement money for nearly three decades to pay for everything from more military spending to tax giveaways for the rich. Every dime of the $2.6 trillion in extra taxes that we paid into the fund is gone. So, instead of money to pay Social Security benefits, the system holds a mess of IOUs left by presidents and Congress critters as they hauled out the actual cash. Many of the politicos presently decrying Social Security's fiscal problem are the very ones who caused it. And to fix it, they now want to tax you again by reducing your benefits. This is Jim Hightower saying, for a real fix, lawmakers must admit their fraud, apologize to us, and restore the system's soundness by locking the trust fund, fully applying the payroll tax to the rich, and fully paying what is owed to America's workers.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
Standing tall against the multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
That's what they're doing out in Wisconsin. That's what they're doing in Indiana. That's what they're doing in Ohio. That's what we did today in here in Pennsylvania. A couple hundred, 300-400 people showed up here in Harrisburg to say, you know what, don't cut education. Don't cut mental health services until you've asked those who are doing very, very well to chip in, to pay their fair share. Amazing stuff. I've got our good friend Irwin Aronson on the phone. Irwin, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, tonight of all nights, I couldn't be but on your show. Thanks for that intro song. Stand is what we must do.
Absolutely. You look at what's going on in Wisconsin. I mean, the T-Twizzlers were talking about tyrannical government and how Obama was overreaching, and I think Walker's the definition.
Well, this is clearly a tyranny of the minority. We know, beyond peradventure, beyond any question, that these 18 cretins, these 18 troglodytes who thwarted democracy tonight, are not speaking for the majority of the people of Wisconsin. And we also know that this was not the beginning of the end. This is the end of the beginning. We're coming back. We're going to stand, and we're going to fight.
And, you know, look, at the end of this, and I said this before, when we were in Wisconsin, the labor council there said we need to call for a general strike. There's a talk across Wisconsin of a one-day general strike. What are your thoughts?
I think that challenging times, desperate times call for desperate measures, and it's time for a desperate measure. When these 18 creeps can violate the Constitution of the great state of Wisconsin, when they can violate the laws that they pass. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Wisconsin has a similar statutory framework to Pennsylvania, an open meetings or sunshine law that requires public meetings to be advertised for an appropriate period of time before they can take place. And they called this meeting under cover of darkness without meeting their own open meetings law requirements. They all need to be impeached, not just recalled. They have committed a high crime, violating the laws of the state of Wisconsin. They have violated the civil rights of every single Wisconsin citizen. And this is a desperate time. They have thwarted democracy. They are, as I said, a tyranny of the minority. And people need to fight back. And when they're threatening our rights, when they're threatening our very fundamental civil rights, threatening our access to our democracy, our right to have our elected representatives work for us instead of we working for them, the time has come for some very desperate action.
Yeah, and, you know, I look at this, and, you know, again, I go back to the whole Tea Party thing that, you know, government, you know, has gotten too intrusive, and they're out of control, and I look at what's going on there. Where are our Tea Party friends? Where are the people who were marching in the streets saying we need to take our government back? And is this what they wanted?
Well, you know, these people came and they said a divided nation and a divided Wisconsin and the divided Pennsylvania, they would unify, and they have unified us. They have united us in ways that we have not been united for three or four decades. And you're absolutely right. These folks who said that there was too much government tonight in Wisconsin took government off our backs and put it right in our checkbooks, right in our wallets, right in our pocketbooks. And they passed a law that says that we're going to have the government intrude upon the right of a school district, for example, and their teachers to negotiate with one another. We're going to prohibit them from negotiating as a matter of law. And that's insane, Rick. That is just nuts. There are a whole lot of other...
It's un-American, if it's anything.
Well, it's un-American, of course, but it's a violation of our fundamental rights. Why did the legislature in Wisconsin pass an open meetings law so that members of that very legislature could ignore it, evade it? If you evade a law, you go to jail. If they evade a law, they call themselves senator. What's up with that?
Let's bring this home then, Irwin, because yesterday the governor gave his budget speech. Not much substance in his speech. A lot of destruction, a lot of pain and suffering in the pages of the document that he put forth. I took from the speech that, you know, unless labor does what he wants them to do, we could be seeing the same kind of attacks here in Pennsylvania by the, you know, if you got to play nice or we're going to come after you kind of mentality. I'm curious what your thoughts of his speech were.
Well, the speech was a campaign speech, but looking at the document, and I have spent considerable time yesterday and today looking at the document is play nice and we're still coming after you. 92% of the proposed slashing, 92%, Rick, is bound up in education and human services. Now, I heard about shared sacrifice, but what that means, apparently, and based on that document, their words, not mine, are working people, needy people, poor people, unemployed people, autistic children, compromised seniors will sacrifice, and the rich people will share in it.
And we're going to end up with a bunch of kids who are going to get less education. And, you know, like the Chamber of Commerce's report, who put Mississippi as the best state there to do business in, one of the lowest educational attainments, less spending, all kinds of negative outcomes. I guess that's who they want us to emulate.
Apparently, this is the race to the bottom, and Tom Corbett, based on this budget document at least, appears to want to win.
You know, I look at the fact that they cut 50% of the funding for higher education, and they think that somehow we're going to be able to create jobs and attract business to this state.
Well, listen, I was talking to a colleague today who has a job here in central Pennsylvania but lives in another state and has been working to move his wife and small children to central Pennsylvania because it's been 18 months since he took on this job, and they haven't been able to sell their house in the Midwest. And now he's having serious doubts about whether he wants to bring his children here, raise his children here in a state where their educational access is compromised in a state where we have a higher priority for cutting business taxes than we do for educating children. Something is wrong with that analysis, and there's something wrong that is as a matter of public policy, not merely as a matter of taxation or spending or who among a group of players pays for what. This is a slash and burn policy. And oh, by the way, Governor Corbett, when he ran, promised a no tax increase state of Pennsylvania, but that budget demands tax increases in every school district in Pennsylvania. It demands tuition increases at public universities. It demands that people with autistic children, with children who have Asperger's, will be taxed in the form of dramatically increased costs to get services if they can pay for it all. The mentally ill and the mentally challenged will not have services unless somebody is taxed to pay for them now. And that's not what I call a no tax increase state or a no tax increase budget. That's what I call dramatic tax increase.
I'm right there with you. Let me ask you this. The governor said that he wanted to make Pennsylvania the Texas of the natural gas industry. I looked at Texas's website. They've got a 7.5% drilling tax. They have a tax where they tax your property based on not what's pulled out of the ground, but the value of the gas under your ground, even if you're drilling it. I think there's a good place to start. If we want to emulate Texas, there's a good place to start.
I quite agree. Listen, Pennsylvania has a history. We need to remember that oil was discovered in North America in northwest Pennsylvania. We need to remember that the anthracite minefield and the bituminous minefields were here in Pennsylvania. And the operators spaced the land, destroyed the environment, and then they left. And now we're having it happen again. And at least if we were setting aside some of the value of the extraction of that gas to pay for the environmental destruction, to pay for the roads that are being destroyed, to pay for the strafing, that would be a start. But we apparently have no commitment to that whatsoever. We have a commitment to saying, hands off. 35 years ago, 70% of the taxes, of the tax revenue that came in Pennsylvania came from the business community, and 30% came from working men and women. Today, that's been turned on its head, and something in excess of 70% of all taxes paid in this state are paid by working people, and something less than 30% are paid by businesses. That cannot go on. That cannot be sustained. That's an absurdity. Corporations get breaks in Pennsylvania that they don't get in their home countries or their home states, but they don't pay taxes here, and they make money here. They extract money from our working people here. There is a moment and a time, if we're going to compare ourselves to places like Texas, if we're going to compare ourselves to places where these industries are operating, we have to treat these industries here as they are treated at home. I go up to the Marcellus Shale fields, and what I find are all kinds of license plates from Texas and from Oklahoma. Our folks aren't getting the jobs, and if our folks aren't getting the jobs, we don't have any income-based tax revenue coming out of this. All we have are big trucks and outsiders wrecking our roads and wrecking our water, and, you know, enough said on that because the New York Times reports on it better than I can.
Lots of liabilities down the road. You know, they say budgets are about values and priorities. And again, you look at this, and I guess our governor's values and his priorities are quite clear. Corporations are fine, well and good. They're protected. They're the entitled class who we're going to give riches to, and basically screw you kids and poor people.
Well, I don't even know what to say when I look at a document like this. I've looked at a lot of budgets over the last nearly 40 years that I've been involved in this, and I've never seen anything quite like this, where we have now made into public policy a dream, and the dream is that children will be dumbed down, that access to higher education will be limited, that access to the environment, to parks, to the beauty of this state will be restricted, that we will fund nothing that helps people, and we will give tax breaks to the multi-rich at the same time. It doesn't make sense to me right now, but a whole lot of my democracy is not making sense to me tonight.
I agree. Last word here tonight. In looking at Wisconsin, how do we put this in perspective for tomorrow? How do we look at this going forward?
We look at this going forward in the way we have looked at every other important movement of people. We didn't pass women's suffrage in the 1920s in this country because we all of a sudden had an epiphany and realized that women had rights. And we didn't pass the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act of 1964 because we suddenly had an epiphany and understood that we have maltreated people of color in this country. And we need to recognize that this is our democracy, and we're going to take it back. We're going to take it back piece by piece, day by day, district by district. And we need to thank the people who reminded us in Wisconsin that we as Americans have an obligation, and the obligation is to interact with our government, to interact with our democracy in a way that assures that the will of the people, not the will of the multi-rich, is what comes out. And that's where tomorrow is.
That's where tomorrow is. And it reminds me of something a woman told me in Wisconsin when we were there. She said this is the first time in her life, and she was probably a little older than me, in her 50s. First time she'd ever been state capital. But that's what brought her out. And you're spot on, Irwin. I appreciate the conversation. Look forward to having you back next week.
I'll be there, and there'll be more to report and more action to fight.
All right. So.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks so much. Now, there's another crisis going on in America, and when we come back, we're going to find out how you can help the crisis here in America, because this is a big one, and your country needs you. Don't turn that dial. We're right back after this.
I'll never turn. I'll never bend. I'm with you now.
Mind-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Well, you know, here's the thing, folks. Big, big trouble here in the U.S. Big trouble. Moscow is now home to the most billionaires. This is really disturbing. Moscow has overtaken New York City as the city with the most billionaires. Moscow has 79. New York has 58. We need to do something about this. There are only 1,209 billionaires in the country, and they're catching us. In fact, the world's richest man is not an American. We have got to do something. I'm beyond myself, Jake. I don't know how to. We need to help. We need to help our billionaires. You know how you know we sit here night after night and say, you know what? You know, times are tough. We want better education. We want better jobs. We want health care. We want pensions. How greedy of us. How dare we want those things when we've got billionaires who aren't at the top of the list?
We got four or five governors that are working hard to create more billionaires in this country. So give them time. Give them time. There's hope for their side yet, Rick.
You know, we're just not creating enough billionaires. And if you remember, Michelle Bachmann, one of my favorite crazies, she said we just don't have enough rich people anymore. Do you know that the U.S. only has 413 billionaires left? Did you know that? That's it. 413. That's it. We should have. That's barely enough. That is barely enough. Barely enough to fill the whole Forbes 400. We've only got, you know, and that's only up from 403. So, you know, this last year we just barely made the 400. Just barely. So what I'm saying is, you know, give up the health care, give up the pensions, give up that collective bargaining. Who needs that? Give up all that stuff because we got billionaires in need. We got billionaires in need.
Well, if you think about it, Rick, now, which is the party that always talks about the American exceptionalism? It's the Republican Party. Never thought of it before, but you brought up something. Apparently, they've been fighting. They've been fighting to make us number one in another area, and I never thought about that. But thanks for bringing it up, Rick.
Well, you know, hey, look, at the end of this, you know, I need to point these things out because there are so many folks who don't realize that we've got a billionaire problem in the country, and we need to have more and more billionaires as we go forward. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Ike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Ike?
Well, you know, I can't say that I'm surprised. I don't know why anybody would be. I mean, this has only been coming down the pike now for the last, since the 80s. Actually, you could take it all the way back to, the days of, FDR. I mean, you know, they fought on this issue, on these issues ever since it started. So, I don't know why everybody's so surprised. Let me give you an example. And I love calling your show because not only can I speak the truth, but I can talk about South Carolina without having to worry about somebody coming by and burning across my yard or firebombing my house. This state's been run by Republicans for 21 years.
Yep.
Everybody out there, if you want to see where you're going with this action that's going on up in the northern tier of states, and this is a north-south thing. Don't think it isn't, okay? Take a look at the stats on South Carolina. We're last in the country when it comes to our education. We're last in the country when it comes to our standard of living. We're last in the country in just about anything and everything that's important to the American people. We're last. Okay, that's where we live. It's a disgusting place to live, and I've coined a new phrase for it. I still live in the Jim Crow South. I'm a wage slave. That's all that I am. Now, I'll give an example of how Republicans do business. They allowed Boeing to bring their operations here from Seattle so they could basically get the benefit of non-union labor.
Right.
In the deal, they gave them almost $1 billion in tax write-off and let them get away with it, okay? $1 billion. 750-something million. They put the taxpayers on the hook for $155 million to fix the roads so Boeing can do business. That's coming out of our pocket. They hit us for $13 million to pay for the expansion of our technical college so their workers could be trained there. Boeing didn't pay for that. The taxpayers are paying for that. Okay?
Yep.
Then on top of that, they busted the machinist union so they wouldn't have to pay union wages. Now, Now they're crying because, oh, and it was a big headline in the Sunday paper. Oh, we're going to pay for all these tax cuts that we've been given over these last few years. The corporate tax rates have been cut. Property taxes have been cut. The reason the unemployment fund is in so much trouble is when times are good, they let the employers quit contributing what they were supposed to be contributing. So then they wound up with a big hole in the budget there too. Well, guess what? One of the things that they put on the table, one of the very first things they put on the table, besides social services cut, like the hospice care and the taking care of special needs kids, what's the other big one that they put on the table?
Well, I would assume cutting out, what's that?
The grocery tax. We need to bring back tax on groceries.
Nice. And I guess Georgia's doing the same thing. I mean, a lot of the southern states are doing that. And again, people need to understand who that tax is aimed at. It harms the lowest income people in your state.
And that's exactly the way that they play the game. Like I said, you shouldn't be surprised at how the Republicans operate. They've been totally out front about this. Now, what I got to say about the whole deal is this. Look, it's all nice to get you little signs and to march around and to raise hell. But if you thought that this was going to go away, and if you thought a couple of weeks of raising hell was going to do it, it ain't going to do it.
Nope.
I'm calling out all the union brothers all across the board, anybody that's carrying a union card. I don't care if you're in professional sports. I don't care if you're in Hollywood. I don't care where you're at. If you're a union member, get off your ass and let's get it done. Number two, the other people I'm calling out is the Democrats. You guys have mealy-mouthed around, and you played this middle-of-the-road crap and Republican light. That day's gone. That's all over with. Now, if you don't get ruthless and you don't get down and dirty with it, then I don't know. You know, I guess you're right. We'll have to form a third party of some sort. But I guess what I'm saying at the end of the day when it comes down to is the people with the power and the people with the money, and I know they're out there, you know, you got to put your money where your mouth's at. If you care about this country and if you like making money from us buying your records and your movies and going to your sporting events and watching your NASCAR races and everywhere else that we go and provide a living for you and make you rich, well, it's time to put up because we're not going to shut up until you do. And the Democrats have got hell to pay if they think they're going to be able to run this middle-of-the-road stuff anymore.
Yep.
Enough's enough, and it's time. You're either, just like you say, you're either at the table or you're on the menu. And if you haven't figured it out, well, now you got it. So
been eaten. What we need to do is we need to make comfortable a little uncomfortable. And when 100,000 people start marching in the streets and surrounding people's homes, and today, I mean, a couple hundred people here in Harrisburg, they marched into an industry lobbying firm, took over the place, filled the place wall to wall, and made those people a little bit uncomfortable.
That's a good point. And you know what? That's right. And that's something else, too, by the way. You're right. You not only need to go after the Republicans, but you need to go. We need to find out where the Koch brothers live. We need to find out where Karl Rove lives. We need to find out we need to hit them at their house. That's where we need to go, and we need to spread out just like you're doing. Go to the lobbyist groups. I mean, we need a massive movement all the way across the board, including a one-day sit down. Just a one-day sit down for every union member that's carrying.
Turn your cars sideways on the highway. Just shut this country down for one day. Show the power of the people. I appreciate the call, brother. Thanks so much.
Love you, brother.
You know, the reality is this is what we need. We need to have people coming together in the streets. We better do this and quick because they are coming for us. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with our good friend Mark Norberg from the Sheet Metal Workers. We're right back after this.
Family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker still isn't listening to hundreds of thousands of people protesting at the Capitol and public opinion polls showing solid majorities supporting collective bargaining and also calling on him to negotiate with Democrats and unions. What may well be the biggest pro-labor rally yet is set for this Saturday in Madison as hundreds of farmers plan to join with workers in a farm labor tractorcade at the Capitol. The pro-worker movement sparked in Wisconsin continues to reverberate nationwide. In Indiana, Thursday, thousands are expected at the state capitol there in another protest of anti-worker bills sponsored by Republicans. In Iowa, Tuesday, hundreds of people packed the state house for hearings on a bill attacking collective bargaining rights for public workers there. Meanwhile, the International Association of Firefighters is escalating its fight against these national attacks on public workers with TV and newspaper ads in Ohio and in Florida. Governor Walker thought he had built an all-powerful ship of state with total control of the legislature, but his ship has crashed on the rocks of Wisconsin's progressive people power. The Green Bay Packers, firefighters, cops, teachers, and nurses all oppose him on the collective bargaining issue, and now God is against him, too. Rabbi Dina Feingold is with the Wisconsin Interfaith Group Wisdom. She says every religion is speaking out against the governor's attack on collective bargaining for public workers. Rabbi Feingold says if given the chance, this is what she would say to Governor Walker.
Well, I would just say, Governor Walker, you've hardened your heart, as did Pharaoh when the slaves of Egypt were trying to seek truth to power. And the hardening of the heart, in the end, doesn't serve you or your people well. And it's time to soften your heart, to begin to listen to the people, not some of the people, but all of the people, to be concerned about their needs so that we can go forward together for the betterment of our state.
As Ohio Governor John Kasich delivered his State of the State address in the Capitol building, thousands of public sector employees and their supporters gathered outside to have their voices heard regarding SB 5. Jesse Russell has more.
The bill, which passed the Senate earlier this month and is now waiting for a vote in the Assembly, would essentially strip workers of their collective bargaining rights. Like his fellow Republican governor in Wisconsin, Kasich has said he needs to remove those rights from workers in order to give greater local control to municipalities. Kasich has been faced with massive rallies outside of the state house for weeks, with one of the bigger rallies happening last Tuesday. Indian Springs Elementary School teacher Rochelle Wilkerson spoke at that rally.
They don't want to hear how we advocate for our students. They don't want to hear how our voices directly affect students every day.
Wilkerson said public employees didn't choose their jobs to get rich.
We do this job because we care and we want to make a difference in the lives of our state.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're a proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Well, you know, we thought we had the right. We thought it was our right until they stole it away from us today in Wisconsin. I got to tell you, that just got me hopping mad. And the other reality is we've been paying too much attention to the Koch brothers. They've been all over the news for buying Republican politicians and a good number of Democrats as well. And while we've been focused on the Koch brothers, everyone else has gotten away happy. They're out of the spotlight. The heat is off of them. And, you know, you look at the Republican Party and a good bit of the Democrats, they appear to be wholly owned subsidiaries of corporate America. The International Chamber of Commerce says jump, and our politicians, they seem to already know, they already know how high. We must now refocus our attention not only on the politicians who are causing all this trouble, like the Gang of 18 there in Wisconsin, but the people who fund them. And while we were focused on the Koch brothers, there's some other people who taking union money and using it against us. I've asked Mark Norberg. He's a former business manager of the sheet metal workers, Local 18 there in Wisconsin. He now works in Washington as a assistant to the general president of the sheet metal workers union. Come talk to us about this. Mark, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this story, M&I Bank. Evidently, they hold a whole bunch of union pension fund money, and they've been funding Scott Walker. Is this true?
Yeah, that's partially true. M&I Bank doesn't fund any or make political donations, but the executives at that institution do. And as we found out just recently, that these executives gave as much as Scott Walker. They gave more to Scott Walker than all the other candidates they gave money to combined. And, in fact, they gave Scott Walker's campaign more money than the Koch brothers.
So what we've seen is we've seen the Koch brothers getting the heat and these other folks walking away. What do we need to do then?
Well, we're starting it right now. We're going to be hand-billing. I'll be up in Madison on Saturday. Organized labor is going to be hand-billing, letting the folks, I'm going to guess there's going to be 200,000 people there this Saturday. That's my guess. And we're going to let them know that the corner bank, M&I Bank, the people that, you know, take our deposits of the wages that working people made, has backed this guy, this Scott Walker. And we have choices. We don't have to bank with M&I, you know. And we're gonna suggest that they do that. There's also another thing that we've learned just recently, that M&I Bank, if I have my numbers right, received $1.7 billion in TARP money and hasn't paid it back yet. And just recently, the Bank of Montreal purchased M&I Bank, and we're concerned that this may prevent M&I Bank from paying back the TARP money that they've been given. And another thing in that transaction that really has us concerned is that the president of M&I Bank, if I have this right, received an $18 million bonus as he sold this company. And, you know, I'd like to ask him if, you know, if you don't plan on paying this TARP money back, how the heck do you get off taking $18 million of it?
Yeah, excellent point. Excellent question. I mean, that is our money after all. If you want more information on this, www.ieonmandi.com. We've got a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. ieonmandi.com. You know, and I look at this, and for me, you know, as I understand it, in Canada, don't they do something with the credit cards from Union Plus and some other from Union groups?
We're trying to find out right now the extent of the position that organized labor has in the Bank of Montreal. In you know, in only like 15 minutes research yesterday, we found out that the Bank of Montreal has over $500 million in pension fund money of organized labor, and I don't believe that's counting these all the other banking that goes on there. And you know, I don't know. You know, I'm not an economist, but I'm thinking if you're looking at losing $500 million or $1 billion in investments in your company, that you got to sit up and listen to what those people are thinking of pulling the money out, have to say.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Mark Norberg, former business manager of the Sheet Metal Workers Local 18 there in Wisconsin, now an assistant with the general president of the Sheet Metal Workers there in Washington. Mark, I understand you're in Indiana, where the latest fights have been going on. Tomorrow, a big rally planned. I guess there was one yesterday, a funeral procession. Tomorrow, a big rally, some 25,000 people expected to come out and protest what they're doing out there. Can you fill us in on some details?
Yeah, you know, the legislation out here is very similar to the legislation that's being pushed in maybe 20 states across the country. You know, they want to enact there's several measures. They want to enact right to work for less in the state. They want to do away with the project labor agreements, which you know, enable projects to be done under budget on time without any work stoppage. They want to even reach down and determine how local union elections are done. You know, the public works, they want to strip them of their rights and bar if you work for the state or a municipality, they want to bar you from holding office. And, you know, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but that just doesn't sound copacetic. It doesn't sound legal. They also want to enact legislation on several points that would pretty much privatize the education system in this state. And, you know, I'm a product of public education, and I know how hard those folks work.
Yep.
And they're not rich, and they don't do it to be rich. They do it because they love to do it. And why in the world would you want to strip those folks of their white, their rights to freely associate with other members and their rights of free speech is beyond me.
Well, here's the thing, Mark. They want to take us back to the good old days. The good old days when labor was free and workers were not.
Yeah, that's right. You and I know you're a student of labor history and history yourself, and this is something, frankly, I never thought we'd see in this country. You know, if you take a look at history and when you see dictatorships come forward, one of the very first things they do is destroy unions and do away with the rights of free association and congregation and the rights of free speech. And, you know, all these Tea Party folks who are proponents of constitutional consistency, you know, if you see this going on and it doesn't raise your hackles, I don't know what's going on in your head.
Well, it doesn't upset them because ideologically they've been told, and they've been repeatedly told ad nauseum by the extreme right that unions are bad. Then, and somehow that thing that is pure democracy, somehow that's socialism. And those people are socialists, and we need to do away with them. And so it's okay, you know, just this once to go after those people. That's what they've got in their head. And I've been asking my Tea Party friends, and, you know, I just had a conversation the other day with one saying, you know, look, why do you think the ideological right in the business community is spending so much political capital, so much money and resource to take the rights away from a very small segment of the population? And they never have an answer.
You know, that's true. A lot of them are ideologues and just spout whatever they heard on Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck, and they just regurgitate that without thinking about it. But, you know, I think if you look at the polls around the country, and when you've got 70% or 66% of the people in this country polling that they think people should have the right to collectively bargain, I start to see cracks in that whole framework of the Tea Party and the Republican Party. And I think those folks are being drawn away from that, specific brand of Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I agree with you. But here's the thing. Here's, you know, the New York Times came out with a piece the other day that said 33% of the country is solidly in favor of labor unions, 25% solidly opposed. And it's that big swath in the middle who either didn't know enough about labor to formulate an opinion or didn't have an opinion. So you look at all the billions of dollars in messaging money that's spent by the Karl Roves and the Koch brothers and all of these think tanks, Heritage, American Enterprise, you know, all of these crazy people, all this money that's been spent, I see there as an opportunity to reach out to those people finally with a message of, here's what labor has done for this country, here's how it created a middle class, and this is how we take our country back in a direction that we all can prosper in. I think there's a real opportunity here, Mark.
Oh, there's a golden opportunity here. Our own website. We track the visitors to that website, and typically we have maybe 20,000 visitors in a certain period of time. Since we became active on this issue the last few weeks, we're pulling in 600,000 folks, and these are union and non-union folks alike. and they're eager for the information that we can give them. And we don't ask them to think one way or the other. We're just putting out the information, and they can't get enough of it. You know, they're wanting to know how to join our union, even though they don't work for a contractor that's signatory to us. And this is part of our strategy: is how do we sustain this movement and bring those folks into the fold? Bring them in the House of Labor.
Yep, I agree. And the thing is, we got to stand up in places like Wisconsin, places like Indiana and Ohio, and right here in Pennsylvania. Again, the website, if you want to find out more about M&I Bank, ionmandi.com. There's a link at therickssmithshow.com. Mark, last question I've got for you. Tomorrow, the big day there in Indiana. I'm sure the weekend's going to have a big rally in Madison, Wisconsin, and across Wisconsin. Can we get you back to talk a little bit about those moving forward?
Oh, absolutely. I'm so looking back to get, I was assigned back to Madison earlier this week, and I've been told by our folks in the state that it's going to be a huge rally. The farmers in the state who are, usually pretty solid Republican have turned on the Republican Party in the state of Wisconsin. And I am told that to expect to see 1,000 pieces of farm equipment in Capitol Square this week. And be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if we see 200,000 people turn out. And you were there. I saw you there a couple weeks ago, and you could feel the spirit and the will of the people at that point. And I think after what happened tonight, I think it's going to break every expectation, every normal thing that this country's used to as far as civil protest. You're going to see the bar set so high. Yep. And in the month since this happened, with hundreds of thousands of people on those grounds protesting and, people occupying the state house, there has not been one single arrest. Not one.
That's an amazing thing. To have that many people come together and have no problems. And look, the people there were extremely peaceful. They were great people, and I think we need to get back there. Again, the websites, ionmandi.com. There's a link at therickssmithshow.com. Oh, because it's ionmandi.com, which it looks kind of stupid, but that's what it is. To get to these sheet metal workers, swwia.org. There's also a link at therickssmithshow.com for that. Mark Norberg, I appreciate your time. Appreciate the information, and keep up the fight, brother.
You too, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We are right back after this.
Beware! Laissez-faire ideological loonies are loose in Washington. They're waving machetes, toting sledgehammers, and going right for your Social Security. The system is broke, they shout, so we must reform it. By reform, they mean destroy, either by privatizing it or gutting it by slashing benefits and raising our retirement age. Also, when they say that Social Security is broke, there's one little question they don't want you to ask. Where did all that money we've been paying into the system go? They don't want you asking that because they stole it. Social Security is remarkably effective and has been very efficiently run. However, a change came in 1984 when the payroll tax was increased a bit to create a surplus to cover the future retirement of the large baby boom population. The extra tax that we've been paying into this trust fund for the past 27 years has added up to $2.6 trillion, including interest. Good planning. But no one locked the trust fund. So lawmakers of both parties have routinely been looting our retirement money for nearly three decades to pay for everything from more military spending to tax giveaways for the rich. Every dime of the $2.6 trillion in extra taxes that we paid into the fund is gone. So, instead of money to pay Social Security benefits, the system holds a mess of IOUs left by presidents and Congress critters as they hauled out the actual cash. Many of the politicos presently decrying Social Security's fiscal problem are the very ones who caused it. And to fix it, they now want to tax you again by reducing your benefits. This is Jim Hightower saying, for a real fix, lawmakers must admit their fraud, apologize to us, and restore the system's soundness by locking the trust fund, fully applying the payroll tax to the rich, and fully paying what is owed to America's workers.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.com.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
What the hell we fighting for? I just surrender and
want
it all. Just got time to say a prayer. While you're waiting for the hammer to
fall. Well, the hammer fell today, and what's kind of interesting to me is not any blowback from the insane right. I think they're thrilled. They're thrilled that 18 senators in Wisconsin decided it was their right, it was their duty, it was their responsibility. It was what the voters sent them to do, to go and steal the rights of workers to organize. I look at this and go, what were these guys thinking? And when you look at the Reuters poll that came out today, Reuters wrote, confidence in the way the country is going has slumped to a two-year low in the last month. And one pollster, he's blaming gas prices. Reuters Ipsos poll showed today the proportion of people who believe the country is going in the wrong track rose 7 points to 64% from last month. It was the highest number of people in an Ipsos poll who believed the country is on the wrong track since Obama took office in 2009. And, you know, I look at this and I go, you know, maybe if we had people who in our political office, like President Obama, whose approval ratings have dropped from 51 down to 49%, maybe if President Obama stood up and said, you know what, we're going to stand by the working people. We're going to make a statement about Wisconsin. I got to be honest, Jake, and I know there's some folks who are big fans, and I like the president, but I'm really concerned at the absence of any real substantive commentary here.
Well, it's not just in this issue, although those of us in labor have every reason in the world to be a little concerned, but on some other issues, he just doesn't seem to be out in front. I don't know if everything is calculated on political repercussions. I don't know, but he needs to step up on labor issues especially. Your comment about the surveys that you talked about and the public perception of way the country's going and the public perception of our government. I mean, you look at what's happening in Wisconsin, and people look at that and wow, that... They just have to say to themselves, you know, really, does it matter? Do we as workers, do we as average citizens matter in this country anymore? And that's what's at stake here. It's more than union rights, and we keep saying that, but I truly believe it is. It goes to the heart of what kind of country are we? Are we really who we tell the rest of the world we are? Are we truly a democracy? Are we truly governed by laws? Are we truly a nation where every individual has inalienable rights? There's some forces out there that would say no. It's about money. It's about power. It's about an elite ruling class.
It's only the corporations who have inalienable rights, Jake. And a couple of quick tweets that came across. Evidently in Wisconsin, nurse organizer calling for plans to shut down Madison there with cars in the morning until we get justice here, she writes. You know, look, at the end of this, what's going to have to happen is we're going to have to take this to the streets. And I do think, like you see in other countries, you know, in France, if they don't, if they're not happy,
they're effective.
They take to the streets.
They tie up Paris for days.
They, you know, truck drivers turn their trucks sideways on the roads. Cars park their cars on the roads. Everything stops until their grievances are heard. None of this, oh, we'll take care of you later. And it comes back to the budgets that we're seeing state after state after state after state run by Republican governors. What are they doing? They're coming after us with hatchets saying, you know what, education, got to go. Public services, got to go. All of this stuff for you and me, got to go. But for corporations, we need to give them more tax cuts. On this bizarre blind faith ideological position that tax cuts seem to create jobs, but there's been no proof of that. Where the proof is when you put money into working class people's pockets through better wages, they consume things. They have disposable income. And when they have disposable income, there are businesses who want to get a piece of that disposable income, and they provide goods and services for those folks. Instead of having these bizarre battles like what they're doing in Wisconsin, I mean, stop and think about all of the lost opportunity. Stop and think about all of the lost wages, all of the lost revenue, all of the stuff that it's cost just the state of Wisconsin in this bizarre little power grab that Walker wants to ram down everyone's throat. It is costing the taxpayers of that state, and eventually it could happen here. You look at that budget, he didn't rule out what Walker's doing. He said, oh, we'll negotiate as long as it's in the best interest of this imaginary taxpayer. Well, aren't those state workers taxpayers? Aren't those teachers taxpayers? Aren't all of those people who get those services taxpayers? And the answer is yes. We seem to forget that. And what sickens me and what angers me is you got these people who say, well, I pay their salaries. They work for me. No. No, they don't. They work for the state. And you give money to the state. They're answerable to the state. You know, you read these blog posts and you go, really? Is this what people really think about their government?
Well, yeah, some of them people are Tea Party people. If I can comment about what they're doing out in Wisconsin, you know, we keep harking back to 1980 and 81, the strike that was illegal, and it was the traffic controllers. What we should have done back then, and we'll say it over and over again, and I guarantee you it would have worked. You go out on a national strike for several days. You think about the amount of money you're talking about. The business people would have been knocking at the door of the White House. And I do believe that the Reagan administration at that time was testing the waters. We're kind of putting our foot in the water and seeing, well, let's see what happens.
Let's see what
and
they do.
We did nothing. This time, Rick, I do believe something's going to happen. It's going to happen drastically one way or the other. Labor has to win this fight. And if it takes a general strike, if it takes shutting down that state, that's what they're going to have to do.
You know, here's the thing. And that frame has been around a lot. It was an illegal strike. No, you know, some of the people that I talked to who were in the higher ranks of that said, look, they had made an agreement with the Reagan people. There was some quid pro quo there that said, look, understand, that strike was not about economics. It was not about wages. And I think people forget that. I don't think they ever knew what it was about. It was about safety. It was about these guys were being so overworked. The equipment was so antiquated. Traffic was getting so heavy that there were a bunch of near misses. And the union kept saying, we've got these safety concerns. We've got these concerns for public safety. And nobody was listening. Nobody in the Reagan administration was listening. So they took this drastic measure where they were going to go on strike for a certain amount of time to draw attention to the fact that they had these safety concerns. Now, as you've pointed out, the Reagan administration took the opportunity to go back on, as I've been told, his word, and fired all those people. And you know what they also did? And this is the amazing part of it. They repaired it. They changed over all the equipment. It's no longer the antiquated stuff that those folks were working with. So their demands were met. But it was that opportunity to steal from them
and some of them were blackballed. But here's the thing. What people have to understand, and you hit on it, because of the fact that it wasn't state of the art, those air traffic controllers who were working long hours because they weren't hiring enough, a lot of people's lives held in the balance, and that's extremely difficult. And a lot of them got out early.
Yep.
A lot of them got out early.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Steve Hicks, president of AppScuff, about these massive budget cuts, the Association of Pennsylvania State College and University Faculties. We're back after this.
Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Gasoline, groceries, and our hate is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is.
Well, and now the cost of going to college. Tuitions are going to have to go up now that the governor has chosen to cut funding for higher education by, it looks like, almost 50%. And you look at this and you go, is this the direction we want the state of Pennsylvania to go into? Is this how we create the next generation of jobs? If you remember during the Clinton years, they kept saying, we need educated students, we need computer programmers, we need all of these advanced degrees. We are now in the knowledge economy. Well, we've just decided that we're going to cut half of the money going into training the knowledge workers. Is that a priority? Is that a value? Is that his morality? I don't know. I've got Steve Hicks on the line. He's president of the Association of Pennsylvania State College and University Faculties. AppScuff.org is the website. Steve, thanks for taking time for me.
Yeah, sure, Rick.
Yeah, you look
How
at this.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm angry, angry, angry. I look at what's going on in Wisconsin. I look at this crappy budget, and I say, you know, this is not what our government should be doing to its people. This is not what we should be doing to kids, and it's certainly not what we should be doing to college students.
No, it wasn't a pretty budget yesterday, or a pretty message, was it?
Budget if you were the drillers, if you were corporations who are able to walk away from your responsibilities. Yeah, this was a great budget for the people who funded Corbett's campaign.
Well, there's not much to say to that, but that seems to be right on at this point. He said in the campaign he wasn't concerned about education, and his first budget says a lot about that, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So now we're talking to the people who are looking at this and they're looking for some direction. You know, okay, well, why does it matter that we cut half of the funding to higher education? You know, people can take out student loans to cover that. Why is it important, Steve? You're the president of the Association of Pennsylvania State College and University Faculties. Why does it matter that we cut half your budget?
Well, if we want a middle class in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we have to have those students coming out taking those knowledge-based jobs that you were just talking about. And the funding that he just cut, and by the way, that's a record for anybody to cut public higher ed funding in this country. 54% is the way we have it figured out. If you're going to do that, then you're taking away opportunities from people from working class families, a chance to get into the middle class, and a chance to develop the middle class. The Obama administration has pushed since they got in office that we need to generate more college graduates, and the kind of cut we saw yesterday from the proposed budget from the governor doesn't say that we're going to graduate more people. In fact, one way that this may be approached, if that's the final number, is caps on enrollment. And I know one of the board members has even mentioned the possibility of losing a university or two. So
closing an entire university so we can continue to give the gas drillers a free pass. Is that my option? I'm going to close down an entire college that would train the workers of the next generation in lieu of taxing the drillers that every other state in the country that has natural gas taxes. That's my option?
That looks to be your option. You lay it out simply. And as you know, a lot of the businesses have headquarters in Delaware and don't pay Pennsylvania taxes. The family that makes $36,000 a year in Pennsylvania pays more taxes than a lot of corporations that do business in this state. So there's an inequality there.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Steve. You know, you look at your members, you look at the student, you know, maybe people you know. Do you think this is a wake-up call for people to go, this guy that really kind of has the wrong priorities, and maybe we need to educate him on what we the people really want, which is an education system that's going to benefit the working class of this nation?
Well, I think Wisconsin was a big wake-up call for a lot of people, Rick, and I think this is going to push people further in that direction. A lot of people have done lip service to the notion of public higher ed being a public good that we all support, rah-rah, but the budgets the last, you know, decade or even longer trend the other way, so it's going to lead to a good debate about why we need public higher education, who it is we're servicing, the fact that, you know, 85% of our students are Pennsylvanians, 75% of the students who graduate stay here and take jobs in Pennsylvania. This is about the growth of the Pennsylvania economy and what we're going to be in the future. And are we going to invest in it or aren't we?
That's an excellent point you made there a second ago with the number of kids from Pennsylvania going to these Pennsylvania schools and then staying here, because one of the frames that we keep hearing from the right in this state is that, well, we're losing our young people. And if what you're saying earlier is true, that we're talking about maybe possibly closing one of the state-run universities, that means you're going to see thousands more students leaving the state and possibly not coming back, and what I would say is a massive brain drain.
Well, yeah, that's got to be a concern. If you were watching the news in early January, New Jersey did a report on higher education, and it was former Governor Kane led the task force that wrote it up for Governor Christie, and that report's kind of disappeared because Governor Christie didn't like what it said. And what it said was they had brain drain in New Jersey because they didn't fund their public higher education institutions the way they should have. And it recommended that even in these tough economic times, I'd find a way to fund public higher ed in the state of New Jersey because you could see the economic effects it was having on New Jersey already. Well, Corbett needs to read this report. Well, he obviously ignored it. And here he's turned right around and proposed the largest cuts to university system in the history of the country.
You know, why is this important?
It's really a shocking number.
It is a shocking number. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I got an advanced copy of the budget, and I'm looking at it. I'm going, that can't be right. It's got to be a typo. 50.
I looked at it, Rick, and I was pretty sure. I said, no, I'm misreading it. I thought it had a zero on it. It wasn't supposed to have on it. So that's how far off I thought it was. So.
Yeah, I mean, and what do we say to the people who want their kids to be able to go to college? They're working class folks, you know, making $30,000, $40,000 a year, trying to scrape by. What this means, evidently, is that those kids are not going to have the opportunity that people who are better off. And to me, education is the great equalizer. It's going to give people the opportunity to succeed. And what we've done to a whole generation of kids, I think, right now by doing this, is we've taken that opportunity away.
Well, I agree with you. You're hitting all my talking points there, Rick. But one other thing, if people don't have the money, the other option is to borrow it. So what he just tossed about $270 million worth of credit to the banks to start shelling out to put people deeper in debt when they get out of college. And we're not too surprised that people are doing – seem to over and over again do things that benefit the banks in this country.
That and he cut.
That's a big concern there.
Yeah, that and he also cut aid to the Higher Education Assistance Agency, cut a good portion of their budget as well.
Right, about 10% out of their budget, which is a need-based program. So those people at the bottom end of the economic spectrum get hurt. Two or three times over in the budget yesterday, we were looking at education. It seems that the Corbett administration doesn't think you need to be educated. I mean, he said some things about school teachers yesterday and the degrees that they need to hold. And obviously what he did in terms of cutting higher ed funding across the board said that education, higher education in particular, doesn't matter that much to him.
Well,
as you say, it's important that some people get their tax breaks.
Well, if let me read directly from his speech. He says, "I'm calling on the employees of the state system of higher education to consider sacrifice." I guess that means you and your members, Steve. He says, "I ask nothing more of our best educated people than to face up to a hard economic reality. The system which you have flourished in is in trouble. We cannot save it by individual efforts. The sacrifice must be collective." And what I find interesting, he uses the word collective. And it seems that collective, anything done collective, when it applies to sacrifice, you know, when it applies to you and me, is a good thing. But when we want to apply that to corporations, somehow that's socialism.
Right. Yeah. It's not somehow socialism. It is socialism, right? Don't you recognize it when you see it? Yeah, you know, moving money from one group of people to another is socialism. So, I think that it's going to be interesting to see the reaction of the public to this budget because he didn't spread the pain around the way it was predicted ahead of time. And, I mean, he said that he was going to do 10% across the board. He's focused his cut. And this is it's a tax increase. There are going to be increases in your local property taxes, and there's going to be an increase in what you pay if you want to go to college. I mean, it's taking money out of your pocketbook either way. So this notion that he isn't hurting anybody's pocketbook and raising taxes, well, he's just found a way to defer the tax to somebody else. In a different way.
Yeah, he has shifted it most certainly. But he gave his lieutenant general's office a nice bump in revenue there. What, $400,000 bump, which equates to what, about a 40% bump in his salary in his revenue there. Good for him. I guess he's going to need it. Let me ask you this. We've got about 2 minutes left. What do we do? How do college students, how do their parents, how do people like me who's, you know, my kids are third grade now, my daughter's in third grade, college is not too far down the road. What do we do to kind of change this?
Well, it was said often enough in the last 2 days, the governor's proposal isn't the end bill, and that's not necessarily the budget. There's a process that's going to go through on the Hill, and I heard that there are a number of people on the Hill on both sides of the aisle who weren't happy with what he did to higher education. I think people need to contact their House of Representatives person and their state senator and tell them that they want those cuts restored for higher education and basic ed and push that way. You know, there's a legislative process, and it can work, and hopefully it works a little better here than it did in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I hope so. I contacted my T-Twizzler representative, Stephen Bloom. That got me absolutely nowhere. But maybe we can reach out to some folks with a little more sanity.
Yeah, there are people on both sides of the aisle who will listen and who care about higher education. I think we have to talk to them and change what's passed coming out of the legislature.
I'm right there with you.
As they say in the business, that's a heavy lift. So
yeah, we got a lot of heavy lifting ahead of us.
We do. You know what? It's higher ed's not the only one threatened under current conditions.
Yeah, well, the mental health services took a good whack, too. Steve Hicks, president of APSCUF, the Association of Pennsylvania State College and University Faculties. APSCUF.org is the website. I appreciate your time, sir. You know, best of luck in the fight.
Okay, thank you very much, and keep up the good work, Rick.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Long as my two hands are fit to use, I'll drink my beer in the tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes, where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put food on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just apply for workers' comp, and you'll get paid for lost time, and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Reason and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com if you missed any portion of the program. Right there at the website for your entertainment, you can download our podcast for your convenience, enjoyment. And if you want to drop us a line, tell us what you think, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Next Friday at 1:30, Eric Epstein and Rock the Capitol is going to have me on their program to talk about issues having to do with labor, issues having to do with the working folks of this country. We'll make sure that we get a link at the ricksmithshow.com so you can chime in. It's going to be at 1:30. We're going to be just doing kind of a web thing where you'll be able to look in and see what we're doing and ask questions and participate. The folks over at Rock the Capitol do a great job with what they're doing, and we like to help them out, and they like to help us out. So good stuff. Education, one of those things that maybe it's important. But in testimony before Congress today, Arne Duncan, he's the education secretary, made really what was seen as a very startling claim. He said this year, as many as 82% of the schools in the country could receive the fail rating under the government's No Child Left Behind standards. You know, as we keep going down the road, these standards keep getting higher and higher and higher. And, you know, if you didn't attain the first level, what makes you think you're going to go to the second or third or fourth? And he said that No Child Left Behind is broken and it has to be fixed now. This law has created dozens of ways for schools to fail and very few ways to help them succeed, Duncan said. He went on to say we should get out of the business of labeling schools as failures and create a new law that is fair and flexible and focused on the schools and the students most at risk. Last year, just 32% of the schools were failing according to the government's testing standards. You know, for me, you look at this, and I've been saying this from the very beginning, this whole standard of these bizarre standardized, industrialized tests, because understand, there's a lot of money in these tests, an awful lot of money, which is why Neil Bush, Georgie's brother, started Ignite Testing Services, because there's a lot of money in it. And you know what he started it with? With Russian money. So a bunch of Russians, a bunch of Saudis gave him money to start this company to make money off of our education system. Think about how twisted that is. But beyond that, the reality is we've turned these tests into, well, things that we ignore now. At first, we were, oh, boy, the tests are bad. And now it's kind of like, well, if everybody's failing, maybe our expectations are a bit overblown. Maybe we're stressing our kids out. I've been reading tons of articles lately of parents whose kids are basically freaking out and breaking down. You've got 6-7-year-olds having nervous breakdowns because we put all this pressure on them. Now, look, I remember as a kid, Jay, the reality is I brought a bad report card home. There was a belt waiting for my behind. But I think things were a little different back when I was in school. You didn't have these high pressure, oh my God, the school is going to fail and they're going to close if you don't pass this test.
Teachers will tell you now one of the bad things about education, at least in public schools, is teaching to test instead of doing it the old conventional way and giving them an overall education. Now the most important thing, because many times it's linked to income, these kids have to pass a test. The kids have to pass the test. So instead of giving them an education in the broad good sense, what seems to become paramount is just that test.
Well, what we've done is we're turning our kids into regurgitators and not critical thinkers. We want people to be at the knowledge level, and I think Carlin has a brilliant quote. I mean, I love George Carlin. We want people who are just smart enough to push the buttons, but not smart enough to ask why or to know why. Just smart enough to run the machines, just smart enough to do the work, but never smart enough to ask why they're getting screwed every time they turn around. And I think, you look at the news. I stopped for breakfast this morning, and they were watching the news, and the news had a conversation about this that idiot from Acorn, the guy who with the video, I forget, O'Keefe, I think his name is, the right-wing loon, and how he's going to bring down NPR. And listening to these people trying to articulate what the story was about really scared me.
Yeah, I'm down.
And a couple of the people I asked, well, did you hear about the phone call that Walker had with the Koch brothers? They hadn't heard about that and didn't believe me when I told them that Walker had called out the National Guard. I had wanted to call out the National Guard against workers. It goes to show, I guess, where our where our education system is.
Well, again, you know, Fox News, they were, I was listening to it coming tonight. I mean, they didn't even mention the fact that he turned down that money. He turned down the money. Never mentioned that,
yep.
But they mentioned the fact that he met with this guy.
Yep. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Robert on line one. How are we doing tonight, Robert? Robert, are you there? There you go. Hey, Robert, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good.
What's on your mind?
Oh, it's just you guys really want to try to affect change in the nation. I think the demographic you need to try to approach is truck drivers. We kind of control the nation, probably have the most important job, and, well, if groceries don't get hauled for a week, ain't nobody got food.
I got to tell you, Robert, right off the bat, I drove a truck for years. I was a card-carrying Teamster for 21 years. For most of that time, I tried to work on organizing truck drivers and tried to get them to act in their own self-interest, especially when gas prices were $4 a barrel a gallon. Now it's going back up to that. If that didn't push truck drivers into action, I don't know what will. Help me. Do you have an idea?
Besides trying to form a truckers union.
They got a truckers union. It's the Teamsters union. The reality is what's happened is the wealth class in this country has so badly bastardized the Teamsters union that, you've got working people who are going, oh, I don't want to be a Teamster. They're baseball bat carrying thugs. When the reality is they negotiate good contracts and have people with decent standards of living. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. We don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
You know, what I would like to see, and there's an owner-operators association. We've had a couple of their people on the program over the years. They can't get their owner-operators to stick together. Again, this comes back down to more than just the union. It's the people. It's, you know, I've said this before, Robert. My membership in the union, carrying that card, was a brotherhood between the people that I was working with. We had a bond, some kind of unity together, solidarity in making our lives collectively better. That just wasn't because I was carrying that card. That's because what I believed, and I think, and I wish that truck drivers would feel that brotherhood amongst each other and really believe in that sticker they put on the back of their truck, no cheap freight.
Yeah, I wish that too. You know, because, I mean, we're probably the one profession in the country that wages haven't gone up in the past 20 to 30 years, I would say.
Yep, and get ready for them to go down even further.
Oh, yeah, it probably does go back even further. I mean, a mile to start.
Yeah, well, we'll wait till your wages go down even further because, they're going to open the southern border. They've already come to an agreement. There's going to be a program set up here in the near future. It's going to happen. So as soon as that happens, I think you're going to, and maybe this is where the chaos happens. Maybe this is the solidarity moment. I can only hope.
All right.
Thanks so much.
You take care there.
I appreciate the call, brother. Call anytime. You know, I look at this, and again, going back to that, and he makes a great point. I spent a considerable amount of time trying to bring truck drivers together to say, look, this is about economics. Put all of your preconceived notions about the Teamsters Union aside, because look, there are things that they've done in the past that I'm not thrilled with. But it was about that solidarity with the people I worked with, much like, being a chocolate worker, Jake. There were people that you stood in solidarity with to make your lives better. When we come back, I want to pick this up on the other side of the break because I do think it's important. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker still isn't listening to hundreds of thousands of people protesting at the Capitol and public opinion polls showing solid majorities supporting collective bargaining and also calling on him to negotiate with Democrats and unions. What may well be the biggest pro-labor rally yet is set for this Saturday in Madison as hundreds of farmers plan to join with workers in a farm labor tractorcade at the Capitol. The pro-worker movement sparked in Wisconsin continues to reverberate nationwide. In Indiana, Thursday, thousands are expected at the state capitol there in another protest of anti-worker bills sponsored by Republicans. In Iowa, Tuesday, hundreds of people packed the state house for hearings on a bill attacking collective bargaining rights for public workers there. Meanwhile, the International Association of Firefighters is escalating its fight against these national attacks on public workers with TV and newspaper ads in Ohio and in Florida. Governor Walker thought he had built an all-powerful ship of state with total control of the legislature, but his ship has crashed on the rocks of Wisconsin's progressive people power. The Green Bay Packers, firefighters, cops, teachers, and nurses all oppose him on the collective bargaining issue, and now God is against him, too. Rabbi Dina Feingold is with the Wisconsin Interfaith Group Wisdom. She says every religion is speaking out against the governor's attack on collective bargaining for public workers. Rabbi Feingold says if given the chance, this is what she would say to Governor Walker.
Well, I would just say, Governor Walker, you've hardened your heart, as did the Pharaoh, when the slaves of Egypt were trying to seek truth to power. And the hardening of the heart, in the end, doesn't serve you or your people well. And it's time to soften your heart, to begin to listen to the people, not some of the people, but all of the people, to be concerned about their needs so that we can go forward together for the betterment of our state.
As Ohio Governor John Kasich delivered his State of the State address in the Capitol building, thousands of public sector employees and their supporters gathered outside to have their voices heard regarding SB 5. Jesse Russell has more.
The bill, which passed the Senate earlier this month and is now waiting for a vote in the Assembly, would essentially strip workers of their collective bargaining rights. Like his fellow Republican governor in Wisconsin, Kasich has said he needs to remove those rights from workers in order to give greater local control to municipalities. Kasich has been faced with massive rallies outside of the State House for weeks, with one of the bigger rallies happening last Tuesday. Indian Springs Elementary School teacher Rochelle Wilkerson spoke at that rally.
They don't want to hear how we advocate for our students. They don't want to hear how our voices directly affect students every day.
Wilkerson said public employees didn't choose their jobs to get rich.
We do this job because we care and we want to make a difference in the lives of our state.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Please check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download it there. Put it on your iPod or MP3 player. Take it with you wherever you want to go. Also, you can drop me a line. Tell me what you think, thoughts, questions, comments. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Or just go to the website and click on contact. Also, you can, at the website, you can see our latest video that's up and running. The Senate today was going to vote on H.R. 1, and that's the spending plan that Republicans put forth. Now, it got shot down. In a pretty amazing way. And also the Democratic plan, was also shot down in the Senate. Because on one hand, what you had is you had the Republicans who went in with a chainsaw and wanted to chainsaw the budget. And you had Democrats who went with a very light scalpel and tried to, you know, nip around the edges. Both were shunned because one was too draconian. One was, you know, maybe not enough. So I guess they're looking for Goldilocks to come and find the porridge that's just right. I don't know. But at the end of this, you look at the Republicans and what they want to do. They want to take us back to days of great pain. And, you know, earlier I said, you know, they want to go back to the good old days when labor was free and workers were not. A lot of that's true, in my opinion. They want to take away all labor protections. They want to take away all voice. They want to take away any assistance for people in need. These budgets across the country are being balanced on the backs of those who are least able to stand up for themselves. These budgets are harming people who don't have the voice. The reason that they're going after unions, and this is, you know, and I ask people, why do you think? The reason they're going after the unions in Wisconsin and in Ohio and across the country is because those are people who have a voice. They still have a voice. The people whose kids need mental health services, they don't have a voice. They don't have an organization to stand up and fight for them. You know? And you just kind of look at this, Jake, and you go, at some point, we've got to wake up and find some sanity.
Funds for kindergarten kids, preschool. That sets the basis for these the lives of these kids. Yep. Apparently, it isn't a top priority.
Let's go to the phone lines. Got Helen on one. How are we doing tonight, Helen?
Hi. I was listening to the trucker saying about how they could shut down the food lines. Well, that might work in places like New York City, but a lot of the people I know out in the rural areas, they've got their 2 or 3 months, some of them 6 months supply like the Mormons do already. And so they're not going to be hurting. And when you're wanting support, there's a lot of people on the very lowest rungs of the working force that really don't feel your pain because their pain is minimum wage. They have absolutely no hope to get any higher. And a lot of the waitresses and wait staff that have done this all their life. I saw a lady kind of limping up to one of the homes over by the hospital where they take care of the elderly, and she must have been in her 50s or 60s in a white uniform, and she was walking very, very laboredly, but you could tell she was an old black woman, and she was probably going to work the other morning. Probably doesn't have anyone to take care of her so she can get on disability because it takes 2 years. So, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are saying, what are you crying about, you union people? We never had it as good as you. And the only reason I know about it is because I worked the union job with the state and I worked a second job on the weekends with these people. And you know, they just don't feel the pain we're feeling because they've always had really bad, hard times.
Yeah, and you'll hear again, yeah, that's an excellent point. And I guess what have we done to their lives better? And I would argue that we have, you know, the labor folks have advocated for programs to help them, the very programs that are now being slashed and burned.
But you got to understand that they don't get that because if they complain, they lose their jobs. All of the rights, it's like last Saturday on the WHP, there was some guy on there named Sullivan, and he was saying about how some of his family were telling them that the restaurants have started charging back the 5% credit card cost to the waitresses and waiters.
Oh, you're kidding.
He couldn't believe it.
No, I have never heard that. Where did you hear that at?
That was on WHP 1 to 2 o'clock, and the guy's name is Sullivan. He runs some kind of firm that does the, I guess, like what QuickBooks would do if you knew how to do QuickBooks. But he looked into it. He went to 13 different restaurants, asked people, and he said six of the restaurants on the East Shore and West Shore that he went to, people that were waiting on him said, yes, that's what happens to us. And a man called in and said, he didn't say what large restaurant chain his daughter worked for, but it happens to her. And it's a very large restaurant chain. He says, I don't want to say what it is because I'm afraid somebody will recognize my voice. But they started that. It wasn't done previously. And I just wonder if it wasn't done in anticipation of Corbett coming in and labor and industry won't do anything about it.
We got to find out who that is. We absolutely have to find out who that is.
Because that's the kind of thing that when you don't get paid, I mean, I've worked at these jobs. These people don't pay you. They say, well, take it to court. Or you go to labor and industry, and they take forever to get your check that you've been cheated out of, and while you're fired because you made a complaint.
But you know, the knowing this, Helen, and you've laid out what I would say the best case for unionization is. Why don't we see people flocking?
Nobody, you know, I mean, nobody goes and unionizes anybody at restaurants. SEIU has just now started within, I guess, the last 5 years to get some of these people that are minimum wage, $10 an hour. People are scared because when they start to talk about unions, even quietly, at maybe at the bar after work, they have to be careful who they are talking with because they get fired.
Because somebody's going to rat them out.
And they're scared. They have no protection. And now with the Republicans in, you know, and these are the kind of people that figure, and I don't understand. They figure, oh, well, why should I vote? It doesn't matter. No matter which party gets in, I'm not going to get any good out of it. So it's hard, and we're up against the wall. And the people that should be our allies just figure, what have you done for us recently?
I'm going to have to, every time we go out, we're going to have to ask somebody now on. You've really piqued my interest, and I really want to know who this chain is. If you find out, please let me know.
Well, the guy is going to be on from 1 to 2 next Saturday on WHP. His name is Sullivan, and he has some kind of show at that time on 560. On Saturday.
All right, Helen. Thanks. Okay. I appreciate that. Sure. Thank you. We eat out quite often. We're gonna have to take a gander at some of this stuff because you know I gotta tell you, Jake. You know when you look at this stuff, this kind of wage theft that goes on and goes unreported because as she's pointed out, people are scared. You know I remember. You know, and I go back to this, and I've told this story before. When I first met my wife, she was volunteering, and I didn't know this at the time, but she was volunteering at this stable. Where the workers, I thought she worked there, but she was just actually a volunteer because she loved riding horses and petting the horses and taking care of them and doing all that insanity. but at the end of the ride, which was $40 for the ride, they gave everyone an envelope and you gave tips to the tour guides. And, you know, I figured that, you know, being, you know, this is the first time I've met her and I wanted to make an impression, you know, being a big deal, you know.
Big time spender.
Yeah. Put a couple extra bucks in there, you know, to try and you know, curry some favor, if you will. Years later, she told me that nobody ever got that money. That money went into the pot of the company, and they gave the people a week's vacation, a paid week's vacation with all of the tip money. Now, look, I spent $40 on the ride, and I threw in $20 into the tip jar, and I saw everybody else throwing $10 in, and there were like 20 people on the ride. That was an awful lot of money that they were stealing from those workers.
No accountability.
And this is the kind of thing that drives me nuts when you have people who are, because I don't understand being afraid of not speaking up. I've never understood it because I got to be honest, I only had a non-union job for a couple of days. I've always been fortunate enough to have that voice on the job. I'm dumbfounded sometimes that people would put up with that time and time again. Look, you steal a nickel from me, I'm coming after you. Yet I'm hearing stories like 5%. Man, you know, and it's not like those waitresses make an awful lot of money. And they work their behinds off.
It's a tough job. But she made the point there isn't. There doesn't seem to be a concerted effort on part of labor to unionize hotels anymore. Not in the last 10 years.
Anyway, and looking at these budget cuts, because that's still on my mind, Chuck Schumer had what I think the right idea. You need to institute a surtax on millionaires and billionaires. If we're all going to feel the pain, I don't know, maybe start feeling the pain. And last night I went home like I always do, and I wish I would stop. I flipped on C-SPAN, and there was the old curmudgeon himself, Alan Simpson, you know, spewing his brand of, well, you know, we got to cut Social Security, we got to rein in those entitlements. And Bernie Sanders, whom I adore, You know, I get, like our producer says here, I have a man crush on him. I guess that's not a gay thing. It's just I like the guy a lot. He goes to Erskine Bowles and to Alan Simpson. He goes, we could fix this by, as the president said when he ran, lifting the cap on anything over $250,000 a year. Would you be in favor of that? And neither one of them were in favor of lifting the cap entirely. In fact, Erskine Bowles said, well, what we've said is, you know, we'll lift it gradually up to like $190,000 a year over the next several years. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. You're still letting the very top of the economic scale get away where the wealth is. You know, they keep saying that we're poor, we're broke. Hey, the country's broke, Jake. Did you know the country's broke? We just don't have any more money left. You know, Michelle Bachmann, there are no more millionaires. We're running out of rich people in this country.
What world is she living in?
You know, and
she makes her own world.
Amazing stuff. Oh. But you know, there she is. You know, with her mind running around.
Well, actually, I think if the very least we should do, if all we can do is start at 200,000. At least we ought to index it. That's the least we can do. The best we can do is just eliminate the cap totally. But again,
that's where I'm at.
But again, politically, that would probably be tough. But doubling it at the very, very, very least and indexing it would be a start.
Well, here she is in her craziness. I got the clip right here.
Running out of rich people in this country.
Yeah, we are. We are running out of rich
under
people.
Under Obamacare, we're running out of rich people. Is she nuts?
No.
Is she absolutely nuts?
Yeah, baby. Oh, yeah, baby.
She's a bomb thrower. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well.
Gangsta administration because they gave all those exemptions to the unions on Obamacare.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Curious what your thoughts on this are. Have they been stealing from you? When you go to work, do you collect every penny you're entitled to? I'm interested. We're right back after this.
Sense and rational thoughts are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Beware. Laissez-faire ideological loonies are loose in Washington. They're waving machetes, toting sledgehammers, and going right for your Social Security. The system is broke, they shout, so we must reform it. By reform, they mean destroy. Either by privatizing it or gutting it by slashing benefits and raising our retirement age. Also, when they say that Social Security is broke, there's one little question they don't want you to ask. Where did all that money we've been paying into the system go? They don't want you asking that because they stole it. Social Security is remarkably effective and has been very efficiently run. However, a change came in 1984 when the payroll tax was increased a bit to create a surplus to cover the future retirement of the large baby boom population. The extra tax that we've been paying into this trust fund for the past 27 years has added up to $2.6 trillion, including interest. Good planning. But no one locked the trust fund. So lawmakers of both parties have routinely been looting our retirement money for nearly three decades to pay for everything from more military spending to tax giveaways for the rich. Every dime of the $2.6 trillion in extra taxes that we paid into the fund is gone. So, instead of money to pay Social Security benefits, the system holds a mess of IOUs left by presidents and Congress critters as they hauled out the actual cash. Many of the politicos presently decrying Social Security's fiscal problem are the very ones who caused it. And to fix it, they now want to tax you again by reducing your benefits. This is Jim Hightower saying, for a real fix, lawmakers must admit their fraud, apologize to us, and restore the system's soundness by locking the trust fund, fully applying the payroll tax to the rich, and fully paying what is owed to America's workers. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.com.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and far red. Father shirt left a cameo. Blue denim head is vape.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You can also email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Our friend in Wisconsin, Representative Nick Milroy, on his Facebook status, put, tell my family that I love them. I'm heading back to the heart of the battle. Remember, Milroy's the guy who was trying to go to his office, and the police tackled him and threw him to the ground in the state capitol. This guy, you know, he's not a little guy. They threw this guy to the ground, and, you know, how insane it's getting out there. But good for him. We're going to try and get him back on the program here in the next couple of days. In South Carolina, their governor, Nikki Haley, she's, you know, the Tea Party favorite. She's about ready to write her memoir. Evidently, she sees, hey, there's some money out there to be made, you know, like the other gold diggers. So she's going to write a memoir. I wonder if it's going to be accurate. And I wonder if, you know, maybe she'll fess up to some of the allegations of infidelity, which seem to be a Republican thing. Out of one side of their mouth, they say, you know, we're good God-fearing Christians, and we're family values people. You know, like our buddy Newt Gingrich. You know, and I love this clip. I mean, I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure if my wife would buy what Gingrich is selling here. Listen to this. It's amazing. Evidently not.
You know the question, and I'm not going to ask it the way everybody else will ask but as it relates to the past and some of those personal issues that you've had, you know, you've talked about how God is a forgiving God, and I'd like you to expand upon that as you went through some of those difficulties, how you saw God's forgiving nature in all of that.
Well, I mean, first of all, there's no question that at times in my life, partially driven by how passionately I felt about this country, that I worked far too hard, and that things happened in my life that were not appropriate.
I wonder if my wife would buy that. Think about this for a second. I mean, it's amazing. Listen to this response.
Question that at times in my life, partially driven by how passionately I felt about this country, that I worked far too hard, and that things happened in my life that were not appropriate.
Yeah, you know, I was walking down the street, and I was just working hard. I was loving my country, carrying my flag. And I tripped, and I ended up naked on top of this woman. I just don't know how it happened. I kind of wonder about that. You know, and in fact, you know, it happened a couple of times. And it was just the weirdest thing. I kept finding myself naked in a room with a woman who wasn't the woman that I said I was going to be married to. Now, look, I don't, honestly and truthfully, you know, I'm no one to throw stones. I'm not, you know, those in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, all that stuff. But I'm not the guy out there saying, I'm the good God-fearing Christian. I'm the family values person. I'm not the one pointing my finger at everybody else saying, you're wrong, I'm right. And I wonder, you know, maybe it's just that he's a much better salesman than I am, Jake. But I wonder if my wife would buy it. Because I love my country. I feel passionate about my love of my country. And I do work way too hard. I spend too many hours working. I wonder if, if one of those moments of being inappropriate, if I would be forgiven. Evidently, though, he never seeks forgiveness because, you know, as the one story goes, his one wife, he handed her divorce papers on the day when she found out she was
I think multiple sclerosis, I think she...
And I believe she eventually died.
Yep.
I mean, that takes... Oh, by the way, the Catholic Church gave the neuter a special dispensation so he could get married in the good graces of the church. Isn't that special?
And, you know, you look at all of these guys, man, and it's one of those things that just makes you scratch your head. The people who are telling us they're these family values folks are the ones who have these twisted, you know, little trysts, if you will. And look, you know, I got to be honest. I don't care what you do in your bedroom. And I hope you don't care what I do mine.
His comment was nothing more than to placate the religious right. I mean, he couldn't in any stretch of his imagination. And Newt, for whatever you think of him, is an intelligent man. We disagree with him, but does he really think that 90% of the rest of the country is going to buy that? Maybe even 95% or 99% is going to buy his lame excuse. Oh, I love my country, so I'm going to cheat on my wife. Well, that's a unique excuse, Rick. There you go.
If you
need an excuse.
I think I should ask for permission first.
There you go.
We should get her on the phone. I think she's asleep now, but maybe it'd work. Maybe it works. I don't know. Honey, I love my country. We're going to have to take one for the team here. Love my country. Will it, you know? do you think it would work, you know, guys out there, or girls? Do you think your significant other would buy it? Do you think you'd buy the, I love my country, so I had, you know, sex with that woman over there? It didn't work for Bill Clinton, and they really tried to skewer Clinton. I mean, again, I go back to all of that, and, you know, Gingrich was right on the bandwagon, man, pointing the finger. Remember that. You remember the Larry Craig? Another one, just out there constantly going after Bill Clinton. You know, Mr. Craig.
Let me be clear. I am not gay. Yeah, yeah. I never have been gay.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah.
See, what you're misunderstanding. He's really a rocker at heart, Rick, and he was tapping his foot, you know. He was keeping the beat. You just don't understand him, do you?
I guess they don't. I guess I just don't get it, man. Because, you know, the reality in all of this is...
I mean, the people who speak the loudest out against people, like President Clinton, and let's be honest, he was a womanizer, they are the worst. They are the worst hypocrites. Amazing.
But, you know, I guess I would just never, my wife wouldn't buy it. And, you know, she just wouldn't buy it. And I'm just like, man, I wish she could. But, you know, if you remember Larry Craig, he had this to say about Clinton. I remember, you know, lusty Larry, Mr. Tap three times with his loafer under the stall. This is what he's got to say about Bill Clinton.
The Senate certainly can bring about a censure resolution, and it's a slap on the wrist. It's a bad boy, Bill Clinton. You're a naughty boy. The American people already know that Bill Clinton is a bad boy, a naughty boy. I'm going to speak out for the citizens of my state who, in the majority, think that Bill Clinton is probably even a nasty, bad, naughty boy.
He's nasty. He's naughty.
Well, I mean, these sick clowns that took a whole year.
This from a guy.
A whole year to have meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting so that they didn't have to address the real serious issues of the people of the United States. Unbelievable. The man lied. He absolutely lied about sex outside of marriage. Boy, now that there is a first in the history of mankind.
But the guy calling Clinton naughty and nasty is a guy who was trying to have sex with a man in a bathroom. I mean, call it what it is. And, you know, he can say...
Let me be clear. I am not gay. Yeah. I never have been gay.
And you look at his, you know, his counterpart.
If you send me $1,000, I won't tell your wife.
Now here's a guy who he wanted to push this whole defense of marriage thing. He wanted to make homosexuality almost illegal, punishable by jail and death and all the other five things. Why? Because he was doing it. He was sniffing crack off the backside of a male hooker. And what I find interesting is how quickly those forgiving Christians turned their back on him. Which tells me they're a very fickle crowd.
The reality is one of them, Jake, if I found out tomorrow you were sniffing crack off the backside of a male hooker, I would say, Jake, you know, whatever gets you through the night, man. whatever keeps you from not shooting a bunch of people in a post office, God bless you.
Well, thanks for that vote. Just
don't do it in my house. but no, I mean, at the end of this, we got our nose in everybody else's business.
Well, look, with Newt, at the end of the day, I mean, when you look at Newt and his political history, he really, religion never publicly or privately, from what I understand, was part of his life. Now, all of a sudden, he wants to run for president, and he needs to curry favor with the right wing of the Republican Party, and all of a sudden, he's has religion in his life, and I'm not questioning whether he's sincere. I'm just saying, that's a bit ironic.
He found Jesus in between the sheets of a hotel room. And also, Sarah Palin, speaking of another one, Sarah Palin will be addressing the Extraordinary Women Conference at Liberty University. You remember, that's the college there founded by Jerry Falwell. Going to speak to 1,000 churches. They've got the hookup for 1,000 churches to watch her speech. I wonder what they're going to pay her. And also her twin, Michelle Bachmann, she said she's going to decide by early summer whether she's going to run for president in 2012, since there's a natural time frame to decide about running for president. Oh, man. Crazy is as crazy does. We're right back after this, 180. We're right back after this. Stick around.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one? Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well. Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave? Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm still trying to figure out if my wife would go along with the Gingrich rationale. Gee, honey, I know I cheated on you, but it's because I love my country so, so much. And I was just working so hard. I wonder if she'd buy it.
I don't think so.
I doubt it, but probably because I'm not such a good salesman. amazing stuff. Let's find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. I've got Ellen Ratner of Talk Radio News Service on the line. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
I wonder if my wife would buy it. I love my country so much, honey. Oh, you know, it's not my fault.
Listen, they are coming up with new things every minute. In fact, I am, tonight I had dinner with somebody who used to be a major Republican, is definitely switching sides and switching views. And he said this is not the party that he grew up with. He can't even believe the things that people like Newt and other people are saying.
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching the Republican candidates, and it's like a loony fest.
Well, you know, I mean, for people to say, essentially, bring it on, they haven't quite said that, but that's exactly what you're hearing about a government shutdown. We have companies, as you know, that are not buying bonds in the United States of America because they don't trust the system, and they're not trusting the stability of our financial system because we can't even get a budget together.
Well, because we've got insane people, and insane people like Rand Paul.
Well, Rand Paul is very insane, but you know, something, the stop clock is right twice a day. And one thing he did say today, when he did his tirade on the floor, it was about 10 minutes, he said that they ought to cut back the military. He said the military has actually increased, and he believes in defense, he said, but the military has increased 120% since 2001. But then again, he talked about entitlements, and he went on and on and on.
You know, at the end of this, the whole military thing is we better get a bigger military if we're going to vote for someone like Gingrich, who wants to take us into Libya and all of these war hawks who want us all over the world.
Well, they do want us all over the world. It's very interesting. Biden actually testified today about our foreign aid, and it's something you haven't had me on that long, but it's something I've been railing about for a long period of time. Everywhere I go, the Chinese are everywhere. Southern Sudan, the Chinese are there. Grenada, Chinese.
Africa.
We get into war. Africa, everywhere. We get into wars, but we're not willing to spend a little bit of money for the hearts and minds that really make a difference and then allow investment open to the Chinese so the Chinese get the contracts and the United States doesn't.
It shows how short-sighted we have become. I mean, on so many levels. You look at these budgets that are going off around the country in these different states, so short-sighted. And the same thing with our foreign policy, so short-sighted.
Very, very, very short-sighted. Interesting, the Republicans are all after the vice president for being in Russia, saying he should be here for the budget. And then the vice president takes a call and tries to call Speaker Boehner, which I guess he did get through to today, and call the Republicans. And then they, act as if it didn't happen.
And we're surprised at that.
Yeah, right. I'm not surprised about that. One thing I did want to mention, I talked to my friend who's the head of the Ohio Democratic Party. You may have been talking about this, so you have stopped me. But, you know, they want to eliminate overtime for small business in the House, the Ohio House. That means they want to replace it with comp time. So a business person wouldn't even necessarily even have a choice. It would just be eliminated.
Yep. Well, you know, here again, they said they were going to run it like a business. They were going to get all of their little perks through, you know, all the things they've been whispering to each other about in the cloakrooms of their think tanks and, you know, like giddy girls. And this is just another one in a long line.
For sure. And Ohio does not seem to let up. I know that the Democratic Party there is trying to get some of the unions and other people to really pay attention to what's going on in Ohio, because once it's done in Ohio, as I always like to say, and you're the neighboring state, so goes Ohio, so goes the nation.
Yeah, and, you know, here's the thing, and Pennsylvania's only next door, and the sad thing is, you know, my home state doing this kind of insanity, just amazing, amazing to me. What
Very
else is going
amazing.
On?
Okay, Senator Sanders from Vermont made a big pitch, and he got, finally, the Smithsonian. This seems like a no-brainer. It actually took a senator to do this, to make sure that things are made in the United States that are sold in the gift shop of the Museum of American History. Not all of the museum shops, but at least at the one of the Museum of American History. The things sold there should actually be made in America.
Yeah, I've been arguing about this for years. You look at the colleges, all of the jerseys, you look at all of the, even the state here, a lot of the things that have the state name on it. One would think that we could have a business here in the state of Pennsylvania to make T-shirts for Penn State University. But evidently that's too much to ask.
Apparently so. always, also, let's not forget to get your popcorn out. I mean, unfortunately, they're taking advantage of people by get your popcorn out. But Peter King is going to be having his hearings tomorrow, and the hearings are going to be on the issue of Muslims in America. And what's fascinating is ProPublica dug up some information on Peter King, not very, very unfindable information, but most of us don't have long memories, and remembered that Peter King supported the IRA.
Oh, gee, tell me it's not so.
So there you have a guy who, you know, absolutely can't, is going on and on about all this kind of war and what kind of things they're doing and violence and then he supported the IRA.
Peter King is one of those guys that you got to have around because I always thought he was always on the fringe, but the Republican Party has seemed to even pass him by. So I guess, you know, like much in the talk radio realm, he's got to outrage even those who are even more outrageous than he's been. And this another example of attempting to outrage the outraged.
Well, you know something, Rick? He was very good friends with a friend of mine who was a complete right-winger journalist for the New York Post, Deborah Orange. She died of stomach cancer. But Peter and Governor's funeral, and the two of them would just get together, and they would, like, lead each other on. I'm telling you, I knew the two of them quite well. I know Peter King well, and I know Orange, knew Deborah Orange. She was one of my better friends, even though she's a Republican. But and they would just egg each other on with stories of, you know, the boogeyman is coming.
Amazing stuff. What else is going on in Washington?
Okay, a few other interesting things going on. The president, actually, I will be going to Southern Sudan, and I will try and call you at least once when I'm in Southern Sudan, although it's going to be late for me, but I'll figure out a way to do it. And the president talked to today. He sent out a press, not a release, but it's a, sort of a call to action, asking that we do with we that President Kiir from Southern Sudan and Bashir, who, as you know, is wanted by The Hague for crimes against humanity, get together and somehow the two of them figure out what they can do to stop the violence in a town called Abyei, which is between northern and southern Sudan. And I don't know if you know this, Rick, but there has always been sort of a drumbeat. Susan Rice, who's our UN representative, has been the one person that's given a drumbeat for us to intervene in southern and northern Sudan. And I go there all the time, and what I've seen is absolutely horrible. But the president is right to call, President Obama is right to call for the two sides to get together and try not to do an American intervention, because that could be an absolute disaster, and it would turn into Somalia. And also interesting, speaking of Somalia, is that the Libyan Muammar Gaddafi has said he actually sent one of his envoys from the military, a lieutenant general, over to Egypt today to try and sort of get them to support not having a no-fly zone. And a lot of other people think, well, maybe he's trying to arrange for him to go to Egypt and to get out of the country of Libya and trying to arrange safe passage. Unclear what's really going on there.
Yeah, and amazing developments every day. And I, at the end of it, he's got to go. But again, you know, another country, do we get in the middle of that as well? I mean, you know, you listen to Gingrich going back to him, and, you know, he wants us to jump right into the mix.
Yeah, Gingrich would have us in so many wars that we broke faster than the speed of light. I agree with you 100%.
And lastly, Mike Pence.
Oh, Mike Pence. Well, Mike Pence today basically was on Fox News, and he is now saying, well, it's time to pick a fight. And he's saying, sometimes you just have to pick a fight, and that's what we're going to be doing.
So that's
now,
all this
he used
is
to
about.
Be a talk show host. I don't know if you're aware of that. So
no.
He must like fighting, but Mike Pence is out there.
Wow. You know, I look at this party and I go, how did we get here? Amazing. Just, wow. Scratch your head.
Well, hopefully the voters will realize what they did, and we're not going to have this problem in 2 years.
From your lips. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you again real soon.
And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
The steel strike of 1919 was called the Hunky Strike because most of the workers were either first or second generation immigrants from Eastern and Central Europe. Up until the end of World War I, workers had benefited from shorter hours, better pay, and the promise of union recognition. Once the war came to an end, the mill owners pursued anti-union open shop policies and other cost-cutting measures. During the strike, there was near total suppression of all civil liberties. Major work issues included the 12-hour day, the 7-day work week, scores of workers being injured and maimed, union recognition, and poverty wages. Mary Harris, better known as Mother Jones, fought tirelessly throughout her life for social justice and human rights as a labor leader and a worker advocate. On August 20th, while visiting striking miners in Homestead, Pennsylvania, home of U.S. Steel's famous Homestead Steelworks, she defied injunctions against public gatherings and addressed 5,000 striking workers and their families. This speech led to her being arrested and jailed for giving an unauthorized speech. When brought before the judge, she was asked who had signed her permit to speak at a public gathering. She answered, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams. As the strike went on, Mother Jones, the grandmother of all agitators, gave many speeches to rally the workers. One speech in Chicago was described by a spy for the U.S. War Department's Military Intelligence Division as the foulest and most profane that can be imagined, teeming with ultra-radical suggestions. Welcoming the spies, she would invite them to the front of the crowd so they could report her words accurately. This Rick Smith Show live stream moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on.
You know, I look at this thing in Wisconsin, man, and it's the classic scenario. Which side of this do you find yourself on? You know, and I go back to the phone call earlier where the guys say, well, we need to organize truck drivers, and I agree. We need to organize truck drivers and waitresses and hotel staff and people who get up every day, bust their behinds for a company or a corporate structure that really doesn't give a rat's behind about them. You know, look, I understand. You know, times are tough. I understand you can pitch in a little bit. I understand that. But I'm looking at corporate America who's sitting on major coin. Their pockets are fat and happy. But the folks who are making that wealth, they're the ones getting the screws. And, you know, I stop and I think about this and, you know, how did we get to this point? How did we get here? How did we get so divided? How did we get pulled from each other? I mean, just in my 21 years of being a union member, I've seen the members pull apart from each other. They've allowed the business types and the right wing to divorce people from their union. And I'm just amazed at this, at how easily it has happened. Just amazing stuff. This is big news coming out of Wisconsin. Wisconsin's firefighter union president, Joe Conway, told one of our good friends an hour ago that he's calling for a general strike in Wisconsin. I think this is huge. I think this is just absolutely huge, and it's something that we desperately need in this country. We need that kind of pulling moment where folks come together and we say, you know what? We've had enough. We want a fair shake. You know, I was standing today at the rally, a couple hundred people saying, look, you know, we want corporations to pay their fair share. We want the Marcellus Shale people who are already charging us the tax to pay it to the state. We'd like to benefit from the wealth that our state is creating from these multinational corporations. And as I'm standing there, two fire trucks went roaring by. And I turn to the person next to me and I go, the sound of socialism. They were going to put out a fire, or they were going to take care of a situation in a private industry. That is the sound of socialism. That is the sound of we together, Jake. We the people, as a people, saying, you know what? We want to take care of each other. It's amazing. And it's amazing that we want to see this torn apart.
We keep saying, I've said it numerous times, we've lost the idea of community. We've lost the idea all too often of the common good. And the other side all too often it says, you know, you can make it on your own. You don't have to worry about anyone else. In fact, that isn't true for 99% of us in our society.
So, again, the big news tonight, Republicans in Wisconsin have evidently, figured that their numbers are so great that they can go and steal the rights of working people away. It was an 18-1 vote. You had one Republican with a conscience, one guy named Dale Schultz, Republican, and he said, look, and this is from his statement. He says, as someone who has spent the better part of the last 4 weeks working toward and hoping for a compromise, this night is difficult. The night that he's talking about is the night where they basically threw all the rules out and said, we're gonna do this. It doesn't matter. He says, I've had the honor and privilege of representing folks in Southwest and South Central Wisconsin for 28 years. Where I come from, compromise isn't a dirty word. He goes on to say that, you know, his constituents reached out to him. He got thousands of emails, thousands of phone calls, a ton of contact. He held meetings with people. Thousands of people came and said, you know, this is what we want. And he said, you know what? I listened to both sides. And everyone told me compromise. Everyone said, you know what? Times are tough. Public employees are willing to pitch in. Let them pitch in, but preserve collective bargaining. As a tool to help keep labor peace in the state for decades going forward. And he says, ultimately, I voted my conscience, which I feel reflects the core beliefs of the majority of voters who sent me here to represent them. And that, you know, that's what our representatives are supposed to do. Not stick to some ideological gun, because I think the people of Wisconsin have been very clear on this issue. And this is where blind ideology over serving the people seems to run the Republican Party, Jake.
Absolutely. On a national level, and certainly in too many of these states, just blind ideology, in spite of the results, in spite of the damage and the destruction. Actually, I was glad to hear about what the head of the firefighters union said. I said, at some point, Rick, it's going to have to be a line, put that line in the sand and say, hey, look, we will not retreat from it. We're going to have to call this governor out. You cannot allow him to get away with that. You cannot. And I understand that it'll probably go to court, but you got to do something else. I mean, you know, I admire his courage. I hope they can pull it off.
Well, I admire the firefighter union's courage as well. Not that of Walker's. He's clearly got his head in the wrong spot. Something else I came across the other day. We had talked about this, about Frank Buckles, who was the last surviving veteran from World War I. What's amazing to me is that we have not, to this point, allowed his family to have a state funeral. I kind of think that, you know what? I kind of think it's in this instance, I think Senator Jay Rockefeller, the Democratic senator in West Virginia, is right. He introduced a resolution seeking permission from Congress for Buckles to lay in honor in the Capitol Rotunda. His funeral is scheduled for March 15th at Arlington. I think this is one of those things, and I don't often get involved in stuff like this, but this is, to me, I think this is one of those rare moments, Jake, where this kind of honor should be played out.
I agree with you. I don't think we can do too much for our veterans, whether it's World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, World War I, and the significance of that war. I mean, think about it. That was the first, really the first World War of major significance where we went out of our borders. Now the Spanish-American War, but that was short and that was decisive. You know, Mr. Roosevelt was involved in all that, but this was the first war that the United States was engaged in over in Europe, and it was significant. And those men made major sacrifices, and I think they should be honored. And this man, I think,
110 years old,
is a quintessential example of the sacrifice of those men. 110? Wow.
That is a full life. Yes. You know, and nothing cheated him. Here's the other thing, though. The reality is, look, you've got Bob Dole. When Bob Dole says Bob Dole wants something, Bob Dole gets something. Bob Dole wants this guy to get a state funeral. You got House Speaker John Boehner, who said that he believes a tribute at Arlington is more than fitting. And, you know, that's it for him. So I find it interesting. You know, stop and think about all the things that guy saw in his life, though. Stop and think about the history that he lived through, especially in West Virginia. The labor strife.
Yes.
The change in this country. I mean, 110 years. That's a long time. And a lot has changed. And I mean, you know, my wife and I were just talking about, you know, how technology has passed us by, and we're not that old. You know, my wife wants me to get her an iPhone so she can learn how to use it. So maybe she can, she's afraid that technology has completely passed her by, and I told her it has, because it's passed me by. I'm struggling to keep up. You know, and it's bad when your 8-year-old knows more about computers than you do. But can you imagine 110 years? But again, I guess this is another one of those moments for me, Jake, where the Republican Party had the opportunity to live up to their rhetoric. They had the opportunity to stand up, be counted, and say, you know what, we're going to honor this guy. I think this is something important, but they chose not to.
Amazing, amazing, amazing.
Yeah, but again,
and yet they get away with it.
Are we surprised? And the answer is no. Anyway, tomorrow night we're gonna work on getting some people from Wisconsin. This is huge. And I'd love to hear what you think, what your thoughts on this are. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Any suggestion of people we should talk to, you know, give us a call, let us know what you think about this, because I think we are absolutely living history. This, as you know, as the professor of democracy said earlier, this is uncharted water for Wisconsin. This is tyrannical in its nature. This is destructive in its form. And we're seeing this model. And understand, you know, I'm still waiting for that to happen here. I'm not as optimistic as some that our governor is going to play nicey-nice. I think he's waiting for the waters to stir out there, so all the attention's over there, so he can sneak in the back door. I'm not as let's wait and see. I think he's coming. I think he either gets what he wants, or like the child in the sandbox, he's going to take his ball and go home, which means kicking us to the curb. And what does that mean for the state? You look at this budget, man. There's all pain here for you and me. But for the corporate buddies, there's a lot of sugar here. That's a lot of sugar coating. And, you know, Daylon Leach spoke at the rally today, and he said, you know, if they did nothing for corporations, it would be okay. But what they've done is they've given them more. How much more do they